Now Probert. Oh, Probert got the right hand free.
He's loose with the right hand, and he starts to retaliate. And down goes Nyland. And the two of them are hammering each other.
Knights of Columbus, that hurt.
It's old time hockey, the way you're supposed to play. You throw a little lumber if a guy gets in your way. You play like Gordie Howe or Eddie fucking Shore. We can't all be Gretzky's, the loser Bobby Orr's. Hey.
The enforcer of all hockey podcasts. It's the Biscuit. It's the Biscuit. The enforcer of all hockey podcasts.
God help the fucking day if fighting's ever banned. As a country will stop working on some badness fucking can.
Hi, everybody. It's the Biscuit Podcast.
Hey, you wanna go? Yeah, okay. Good luck, man. Good luck to you too, buddy.
All right, Biscuit Babies, it's time. It's the playoffs. Everybody's excited. Getting fired up into them. We're going to cover, you know, each division. And there's only one person I think of when I think of the Central. He's been on before to do specifically the Blackhawks, a team preview a couple years ago. And then this year we went over the Blackhawks and the Central. My good buddy, Gatekeeper from therink.com. How we doing, Gate?
What's up, my brother? How you doing?
Dude, I'm living good. The dream, man. Living the dream.
I'd be a little bit better if the Blackhawks actually made the playoffs, but as I predicted back in September, they didn't make it. So.
Yeah, I think we both picked them. I didn't think they would do as well as they actually did, though.
You know what? I actually predicted them to do slightly better. I pulled up. Like, I hadn't even looked at my predictions. I kind of just knew that I picked them towards the bottom. Yesterday, I pulled up my predictions, and I was actually fairly close to what was going on. I gave more credit. I said they were going to have 92 points, and that isn't where they ended up. But they did end up second to last, and thanks to Minnesota and their failure in the last like month of the season, Minnesota actually took last, like I predicted them to.
Yeah, I had Minnesota in last, and Chicago right above them, and then Avalanche, Dallas, Winnipeg, Predators, and then I had your favorite team in the Central, the Blues, winning it, and the. But you know my thing with the Blues is I thought they were going to be terrible, so I always do the opposite of what I think they're going to do, and that's why I had them finishing first this year.
Yeah, I actually kind of flip-flopped. I had Winnipeg taking the division and then Predators taking second. Then I had Dallas and St. Louis, which they flip-flopped. So I was fairly close.
Yeah, we weren't too off. It's like, you know, we listen to hockey and run podcasts for, you know, for a job, kind of.
Yeah, no kidding. We've been BSing people for years now.
Oh, shit, dude. Well, no, you know, just touching back on Chicago real quick, I think it's looking brighter than I thought it would be at the end of the season. There were some guys that really turned it on, and I really liked, you know, Strom coming in there and finding his game again. And I thought Gustafson was fucking awesome this year. And, you know, when it seemed like Taves had enough and was like, fuck this, I'm back, I'm the captain, let's do this. And Kane's just one of the best Americans to ever play the game.
Yeah, he's going to probably finish as the top American player when he retires. I mean, he may get, you know, passed up by, like, you know, someone like Eichel or someone, or Matthews.
Yeah, but down the line, yeah. Maybe. Yeah,
for a while there, he's going to be the best American player that ever lived.
He's something else, man. He, every year it seems like he's like on his 20 goal or 20 point streak, like every year now. And he just seems to be able to slow the game down and play at like an elevated pace that you just, there's nothing you can do with him. He's just going to do what Patrick Kane does.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't really stop him. You can only hope to contain him. And I know that's kind of like a cliche, but that's kind of how it is with him. He's going to get his points. He's going to get his goals. So if you can control everyone around him.
Right.
And yeah, the Blackhawks, they were super top heavy this year. Taves had a career year. DeBrincat had a career year. Kane had a career year.
DeBrincat's a stud.
Yeah, he's turning out to be a stud. And I was down on the guy when he came in.
Oh, yeah?
He's 5'7". He's only 160 pounds. Like, someone's going to, you know, take him out. But you know what? He's found his little niche. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's turning out to be one of the top snipers in the NHL.
Yeah, he's lucky he's in the league now and not, you know, early 2000s. I don't think he'd be able to do as well as he would. He'd be getting crushed a little bit more.
No, and you can say that with a lot of players now.
Absolutely.
They're drafting a lot smaller players. And, you know, they're allowing or they're eliminating the clutching and grabbing. They're letting these players use their creativity,
yep.
Which is probably good for the you know, the marketing of the league. But for all of us that, you know, grew up in the 80s and 90s watching hockey, like, it's like, oh, man, you know, Chris Pronger or Chris Chelios or someone would have just, you know, drove Elks to bring it through the ice. But it's just not like that anymore.
Yeah, every time I see someone stand in front of the crease, I'm like, how? How is he just standing there? How is that happening right now?
Yeah.
And now, what do you think of the goalie situation going into next year? But, you know, before we move on and just get into the Central playoff breakdown here, I know you're a big right?
Yeah, Colin Delia is my boy. I've watched him since, and I talked about this before, I've watched him since prospect camp 2-3 years ago, followed him through, you know, the end of his college career, and then I was really hoping the Blackhawks would sign him. I didn't think they would, because they don't sign a lot of free agents out of prospect camp. So I didn't think he would get a chance, but I really wanted him to. And I thought that their goalie depth was really crap in the organization. And to my surprise, they signed him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he played in Indianapolis, which is ECHL. He kind of flip-flopped around, played real well in the AHL, and then got his chance last year. That was the Scott Foster game, and we talked about that earlier, where he got his first NHL win. But Scott Foster, you know, ended up finishing
the game. Stealing his fury there.
Yeah, right. And then and this year, with Corey Crawford getting hurt once again.
Always now, huh? Right? That's just going to be the thing.
Well, I mean, he got another concussion. I mean, he's one, as my partner John Jekyll says, he's one swift breeze from being, you know, knocked out for good.
Toast. Him and Jonathan Quick cannot stay healthy, man. It's just they're at that point. And with, like you said, with a concussion, man, once you've had multiple, you're more prone to have more. So he is, you know, one wrong touch of the head away from never. He's going to have to call it, you know, just for his own, you know, well-being.
Well, and let's be honest. I mean, for the future, they're going to have to build, or they're going to have some kind of plan for the future. Corey Crawford's 34. He's not going to be around forever.
Them dudes in front of him ain't too much younger either.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's another thing altogether. Overall, for the Blackhawks, was really pretty good this year.
Yeah.
Their high danger save percentage was like top five in the league. All three goalies, Cam Ward, which I got to give him credit. I wasn't really too high on him coming in. He played very well. Corey Crawford amazed me when he came back.
But yeah, he was so good when he came back, it kind of blew me away.
Yeah, he wasn't able to, or he wasn't on the ice for 9 months. He stepped right in, and he actually played fairly well. He dropped off a little bit before he got hurt, which some people are going to really forget about. He kind of dropped off down to more like an average normal, which is fine. And then he got hurt. They brought up Delia. Delia played really well, came out of the box really hot. And he kind of normalized a little bit, but he played well. So they got some pretty good goalies in the system. I think they're probably going to have to, you know, add a goalie or two.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And I don't think Cam Ward will be back. I think next year it's going to be Corey Crawford and Colin Delia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's probably going to be their battery, because Crawford's got one more year left on his contract.
Yeah.
As long as he's healthy, and he got hurt last night or two nights ago.
Jesus.
It was just a groin injury. So, I mean, that happens with goalies. I assume he'll be back to start the season. He's going to have probably a pretty good camp. So I would assume it's going to be Corey Crawford and Colin Delia next year. Nothing against Cam Ward. I think someone's going to sign Cam Ward and give him some decent money, because he earned at least another one-year decent contract to play for a team.
I think Edmonton should take a look at him, if I'm being honest there. I think that he'd be a good fit out there. Like you said, he's earned at least a chance to try to not be a starter.
And he's played on a team that gives up a ton of shots, so just like Edmonton, you know.
Right, maybe. Right. And another dude, in one of my least favorite players in the league, who had a quiet but solid season, is Brandon Saad.
Yeah, for sure. I like Brandon Saad. I always have. I hated to see him go the first time.
Right.
But we knew, you know, the Blackhawks kind of were in a bad position with the salary cap. They had to let him go, and
but he
were in a bad position with Panarin.
Yeah, I was looking at the end of the season numbers. I was like, damn, he had a fucking hell of a season.
Yeah, he played third line for probably the last, quarter of the season,
mm-hmm.
which is okay, because they needed help. They didn't have any outside of their top six. Their bottom six was terrible. It's scoring. So if it wasn't Taves, Kane, DeBrincat, or Saad scoring goals, or Eric Gustafson scoring goals, no one was scoring goals for this team. So, you know, he had a pretty decent season. I you know, he may be slightly overpaid, but you know what? I want him on my team.
Right.
I like what he does. He goes hard to the net, which is not the Blackhawks don't have a lot of people on that team that do that. They've picked up a couple during the season in, like, Perlini and Caggiula.
Yeah, Perlini had a hot streak in there, too.
Yeah, Perlini, he's another really hot, cold guy.
Yeah.
I said this on Twitter the other day. If he can stay in Chicago, train real hard this year, and be more consistent, that guy's going to be an under-the-radar player because he's got the talent. I just think he needs it between the ears.
Yeah. Another dude I picked up on my fantasy team at the end of this last couple stretch here was Connor Murphy, and he was fucking banging, man.
Connor Murphy's been a really good player for the Blackhawks.
He's solid, man.
A lot of people hold it against him that he's not Nicholas Hjalmarsson. But who really is? Mm-hmm. You know, Connor Murphy's been he's been solid from top to bottom. The Blackhawks actually really played better when he came back from his back injury. And, you know, unfortunately, it cost Joel Quenneville his job. But, I like Connor Murphy as a solid, probably two-way defenseman. He's not going to score a ton of goals for you, and he's not going to show up on the score sheet. He's not going to show up on the highlight reel, but he's a solid guy.
Right.
I think they don't have enough of those guys on the team, so I think they need to keep him around.
Oh, I agree, man. Now, when we picked our teams at the beginning of the year, did you have one team going to the wild card from the Central or two? I can't remember who I had, but obviously I knew I had the Blues and the Preds and the Jets going. And I don't know if I had Dallas and Avalanche going too, or if I just picked Dallas.
I would assume I only had one wild card.
I think I did too.
I don't remember the playoff breakdown of it, but I would assume I would have only said one.
So I think we pretty much nailed the teams going in, really.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I would have probably left the Avalanche out.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know what you're going to get with it. I mean, that was a kind of a 50-50 coin flip. But the top four, Winnipeg, Predators, Dallas, and St. Louis, I for sure thought that they were coming.
It seemed like the easiest no-brainer from all the divisions. Like, those guys are going. It seemed like there was a clear-cut situation there.
Right, yeah.
And, this is my first year doing this. I made like I call it my playoff algorithm, and I did 9 things that I think that are like important to like a successful team. And I just did straight up head to head Preds versus Stars, check who gets it, and then, you know, went with that. So if this doesn't work in the first round, I'm going to burn it to the ground. But it's something I'm going to try out and see how it works this year. So we'll start just with the Preds and the Stars. How do you see that going for either team, and who do you like in the series, and why?
The Preds and the Stars. You know what? I've always liked the Preds as a team. Like their fans, I don't like. They're like St. Louis. They're St. Louis. I don't like their fans. Their fans are always yipping and yapping about stuff, and they've never earned anything. But as a team, I like the team. Like, I like Arvidsson. I like Forsberg. I like Johansson. Pekarene, when he can stay healthy, I really like him.
Yeah.
I like PK Subban a lot.
They've added the right pieces the last couple of years too.
Yeah, and like Wayne Simmonds, like he's a biscuit kind of guy, right?
Fuck yeah, he is, man.
Yeah, so I mean, that was a good and last year they picked up Ryan Hartman from the Blackhawks,
which, right?
He's kind of a biscuit kind of guy, you know.
Yeah.
He's goes hard to the paint, tough guy, you know. Likes to fight, that kind of stuff.
I was happy to see him bring McLeod back too. I mean, that's definitely a biscuit dude.
Yeah, and when I was kind of like going through the stats this morning, because I'll be honest, I haven't been watching anything much more than the Blackhawks.
Right.
So what's the Blackhawks and all their shenanigans that were going on this spring? But I was kind of breaking down the stats, and I was kind of looking at how the teams go, and I think that Dallas can really surprise the Predators, because Dallas they're really good in net, which if you got a hot goalie in the playoffs, that can really, really help.
Yeah, sure does.
And they don't, as far as like their high danger save percentage, they're really good. So like anything in close, they're really good at that. I think their only problem, and this is kind of like how the LA Kings were back in, I think it's 2012 when they won the Cup. And I'm not saying Dallas can win the Cup. I'm not going to go out on that. You know, that's like a crazy hot take. But what happened with that Kings team was they had a really hard time scoring goals, and they took the 8th seed. But they were excellent defensively. They didn't give up a lot of shots. Their goalies were really hot. And they just basically played that playoff hockey all the way through, low scoring, good defense, and that's kind of what Dallas is.
I think a lot of goals. Yeah, I think Dallas, nobody this season has been able to pour a lot of goals on them, and that's, like you said, at this time of the year, it's going to be huge with Ben Bishop really coming back and having a resurgence, and Anton Khudobin being, I mean, basically a 1B, really. They didn't give up shit for goals this year. So that's, it's huge, and they've just managed and played well. And they've got guys on that on their offense that if they turn on, it's Dallas will be a hard team to beat.
Yeah, and like Radulov, like, he's a big body, and he's built for playoff hockey.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. He's going to go hard to the net. He's like a bowling ball. So they got that and Jamie Benn. And Tyler Seguin's not, you know, he's no slouch. Like, they've got some good offense. If they can actually put the puck in the net.
And Seguin's been through it, too.
Yeah. I really think that Dallas can surprise the Predators. And not to take anything away from the Predators, because they've had a pretty decent defense themselves, but their stats are kind of all over the place. They're really good, like, possession-wise. They have really good possession numbers. But yeah. I don't know. There's just something looking at these stats tells me that if, you know, Ben Bishop and Khudobin are good and their defense kind of holds up to the way it's held up, they could really surprise the Predators. And, you know, to be honest with you, I wouldn't be heartbroken if the Predators got knocked out the first round.
I wouldn't either. I would actually – I prefer it. And I think I look at if they slip any on in the offensive zone and Dallas keeps – you know, pushes that fucking puck. I mean, they've got Klingberg and that who's that young kid? Hesekainen or whatever his name is?
Not Hekkarainen. That's the Blackhawks guy. I know what you're talking about, though. The young defenseman.
Kid's had a hell of a season. I mean, probably will get a Calder nominee, I would assume. And then they've got dudes like Roman Polak who will, you know, if it gets down to, you know, playoff chippiness, that dude can stand in for your team there and give a little hell.
To borrow an old term, he will knock your dick in the dirt.
That's right, buddy.
Yes, he's one of those guys, man. He's rough.
Yeah, he doesn't mind it at all. So when I broke it down with my, you know, 9-point system, I have Dallas edging out Predators by one, but it's that tiebreaker, and I think and I want Dallas to win it just to kind of fucking mix it up a little bit. Let's see a different team in the next, you know, the second round. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they got – you know what? I'm looking more at the roster, and you were talking about Miro Heiskanen.
Yes, yes.
That's the guy. Yeah, really good guy.
Yeah, he's fucking good.
Yeah, but they've got some big boys on the back end. Mark Mathot, they've got Jamie Oleksiak.
Those are tough dudes.
Yeah, those are playoff defensemen. And you could say the league – you know, a lot of people say the league's changed. They're you know, these 5'9" defensemen are great. Almost all of their defensemen are over 6 foot. They've got big boys back there. Yeah. They are going to hope to protect the house on the back end.
So, I completely forgot that Mathot was there. So, I mean, that's a hell of a decor they have going in there. And I think Oleksiak gets scratched sometimes. So that's even saying more about their decor.
Yeah, and I mean, that guy's 6'7", 255. He's a big boy.
Dude, the few times he's chucked him, he fucking holds his own, man. He's I'm a fan of him.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm, you know what? It may not happen, but I would pick Dallas over the Preds. Just, you know,
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to agree with you. And my new Biscuit Analytics computer system has chosen them.
So. Just say computer boys. You're turning into a computer boy.
I need more plays, bro.
You know what? And another thing I wanted to bring up, I don't want to forget before we leave here, is, you know, the Blackhawks played the Preds. And in the first period, they didn't outlast the Preds yesterday just because they're not a deep enough team. But if you watch what happened, the Preds dominated in shots in the first period, but the Blackhawks went into the first intermission up 2-0.
I watched Columbus dismantle that Nashville team a week ago. I mean, I think the final was like 6-2, maybe something like that. They didn't, and maybe you're slipping at the end of the year because you know you're going to the playoffs, but they looked like a team that's going to lose in the first round.
And also with Nashville, they're not exactly the highest scoring team in the league. They're like 19th or 20th in the league.
Which is bad going against Dallas, dude.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're really good in goals against. Like, they're Rene UC Jokinen? Yeah. Are good goalies.
Isn't it Saros?
Oh, yeah, it is Saros. Yeah, UC Saros. Sorry. Jokinen, yeah. I get all these Swedish and Finnish.
They're all the same person.
Yeah, but they're not really – Dallas doesn't score a lot, but their defense is really good. So it might be a low-scoring series because neither team scores a lot of goals, but it's going to be a low-scoring defensive. It's going to be just defense.
You're a dude cut from the same ilk as me. I don't mind a low-scoring playoff hockey game, dude. I almost prefer it. I kind of like that it's 1-0 right now. What's going to happen? Is this game going to end 2-0, 1-1? You know, like, I like that battle of a close game like that, especially in the playoffs. And the only reason I would want a high-scoring event is if Dallas is pouring on a bunch of goals at home just so I can hear the fucking Pantera song.
I'm with you on that, 100%.
The more Pantera song, the better for everybody.
Yes, for sure. I'm completely with you on that one.
So the next one, and this is an intriguing battle too, is the Jets of Winnipeg and then your favorite team, the St. Louis Blues. And I got to tell you, every time you're on the show, I get 4 or 5 hate mails from people from St. Louis going, fuck that guy, this is bullshit. And it's hilarious, dude. I love it. So always shit on the Blues because their fans love it, dude.
and my hatred isn't necessarily with the team because I like the team. I love Ryan O'Reilly. I love Colton Parayko.
Oh, O'Reilly, I love him.
I mean, if the Blackhawks could have those players on their team, oh, God, I would love that. Those are two excellent players. And the Vince Dunn, he's a really good defenseman. They've got some really good players on that team. I like they're a lot like the Preds. It's like it's the fans that really drive it home for me. That like you got to do. We won the division. Okay, congratulations. But you still don't have Stanley Cup. And the same with the Preds. Like,
God damn it,
Cup, and I'll give you all the credit in the world. But it's a Twitter thing. You know, it's the vocal minority.
I'm so worried being a Blue Jackets fans, a fan, that we're going to be the Columbus Blues and it's going to be 70 years for us too with no fucking sniff of the cup or anything like that. So I have sympathy for them, but I love that people still fucking hate each other because of sports though. Like, cause if you like at a fucking bar, you guys are going to still get along just because you're hockey fans. But I love that fucking, I love it. You should fucking hate people sometimes because of sports. It makes life enjoyable.
Yeah, and you know what? And a lot of that hatred, too, was back to when, like, David Backes and Ryan Reeves were on the team. And mm-hmm. you'd see cheap shots all the time. You don't really see that with the Blues much anymore. I don't hate the team. I honestly think they can beat Winnipeg. And even more than I think that Dallas can beat the Preds.
Yeah.
Because I think Winnipeg is a really hollow team.
They seem like...
Yeah.
Hollow, I mean, I don't know if I can find a better word than that because, yeah, you made it. You did very well. Connor Hellebuyck, like, kind of just, like, skidded along and, like, did just enough to be, like, good. And they win games, but they're not that impressive to me. And one of my checklist thing is my gut pick. On the Preds and Stars, my gut pick is Dallas. On this one, it's Blues, but the new computer system said Jets. And it's one of the few ones I have that broke down like that. And I really think that you nailed it when you said hollow. And I don't know what it is. What do you think it is about that Winnipeg team that makes them this, like, a team perfectly set up to lose?
Well, they're out of the Central Division teams that made the playoffs. They have the most goals for, which, okay, they score a lot of goals. But you've seen that with the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks were in the top 5, top 10 of most goals scored in the NHL. And because they're horrible on the defensive end of the ice, and they gave up the second most shots in the NHL, they didn't make the playoffs. And they had, you know, four or five guys that had career years. So goals for, you score a lot of goals, you win games, you know, 7-5, things like that. It looks really good in the regular season. When you get to the playoffs, it tightens down. Like, the refs are not giving you power plays.
Right.
They're letting a lot more stuff go. Goals are not as easy to come by. You're playing against good teams every night. You don't have any bum-slaying nights.
No, everybody's going 100 at all times. Best players in the world playing their best at all times.
Yeah, right. So things – and that's what happened to the Blackhawks, you know, in 2016 against the Preds. The Blackhawks went into the playoffs looking real good. They scored a lot of goals. But when you looked at the actual stats, they had won a lot of one-goal games. They had won shootout games. Like, some of those stats were a little bit padded, and they were a little bit hollow. And they came in, they underestimated the Preds, and the Preds just stomped them up and down the rink. And that's kind of what could happen to Winnipeg.
Was that the series they got swept a few years ago?
Who's that?
Chicago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They got swept by the Preds the year after they won the Cup.
That lost me a lot of money, Chicago. Thanks.
Yeah, they had the best record they've ever had.
They were on fucking fire.
Yeah. That was when they had Panarin. That was when they traded.
Oh, yeah. That was when he won the Calder then, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And he didn't show up necessarily in the playoffs. He wasn't the reason they lost, but they weren't able to score, and they got swept in the first round. And I have not – and that's – kind of goes back to the Preds things. Like, I'm going to hear about – I've already heard about that, you know, when the season ended, the Preds fans coming back, you know, we swept you 3 years ago. Okay, all right, we get it, you know.
Yeah.
This is a down period for the Blackhawks. We didn't expect you to – we didn't expect
– kind of beating a dead horse there.
Yeah, for sure. So, but anyway, back to the you know, the Winnipeg Jets. I think they're kind of set up here. The Winnipeg Jets are 4-5-1 in their last 10 games, which is not really all that good. The St. Louis Blues are 8-1-1 in their last 10 games.
Now, so what do you think? You're a goalie, dude. What, do you enjoy a story like Binnington, a young dude who gets called up and just fucking catches fire? Or does it worry you as somebody who appreciates building a prospect and seeing, you know, multiple goalies? I mean, I think of Steve Mason, who came in, was so good as a rookie. But I don't know if he had the right time to develop, and then when people figured him out, he was fucking doomed.
Yeah, there's two schools of thought on that. I mean, Binnington actually isn't that young. He's been kicking around the minors for a while.
So, okay, good. Well, so that shows in it, because he's a fucking killer.
Yeah, he's been I don't necessarily trust guys that just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's scary.
It scares me, because, you know, very, very – you don't have a lot of room for error. There's no margin for error in the playoffs. Like, if he has two bad games, like, if you're depending on this guy to you know, basically stand on his head for the entire playoffs, and he has two bad games to start off with, that could be bad. And I don't like
– And then you're calling up a guy who, you know, and Jake Allen, who was your starter and now isn't, and –
I don't like Jake Allen at all.
And that's a head case stuff, though, too. He might be a little fucked up mentally right now.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what, you know, again, what happened to the Blackhawks last year when you screwed at the goalie's head. I think, you know, they're going to have to stick with Binnington and hope that he continues this hot play into the playoffs.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he's been kicking around the minors for a while. He's been through playoff races in the minors. He's been through some hardships, and he's learned how to deal with that.
Right. What's hard there is he's so hot right now, it's going to cool off.
For sure.
You know, and it might be at the perfect wrong time. You know, the Pittsburgh got really lucky there where Matt Murray would be hurt for the whole fucking season, and then Andre would kind of play a mediocre game but still win, and they'd still bench him, and Matt Murray would catch fucking fire and win two cups in his first 2 years.
Yeah, see a little bit, a glimmer of hope for the St. Louis Blues is that they don't give up a lot of high danger chances in close. They actually were third best in the league the least amount of high danger chances in close. So that will help in the playoffs. When you don't have a lot of scrums in front of the net, you don't have guys, you know, darting across the slot within 10 feet of the net, you know, just picking your goalie apart, that will help them. So we'll see how they can do against the Jets, who have, you know, been really pretty, for the most part, pretty lukewarm
are
for the second half of the season.
Are they the best mediocre team ever? I mean, it's like, it's so fucking weird to me. Like, they're an amazing team. The record speaks for itself, but it's like, I just don't know. So that's why I said, like, I think the Blues are going to win, but I am I'm becoming a fucking analytics fucking cuck shill this year. And I'm going by the new Biscuit Beta 600, and it says the Jets and my algorithms 5-4, Jets are going to fucking beat the Blues.
Yeah, I think if there's going to be the upset, I think it would I think if the upset would be probably the Blues will beat the Winnipeg Jets. I think more like
Now you're winning. Now you're winning back all your haters. They're going, all right, I like this guy now.
Listen, I'm as hard on the Blackhawks as anybody is.
Oh, absolutely, you are.
Stuff. I am. Or you're like I'm. Our podcast has been branded the most negative Blackhawks podcast ever. So
you guys are one of the most honest team podcasts I've ever heard. You don't have, you know, fucking rose-colored glasses on.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest. You know, I think the Blues can beat the Jets and go on to the next round. I think, you know, while I still think Dallas can beat the Preds too, it wouldn't surprise me if the Preds actually just will their way into the second round. But then that second round, the Preds and the Preds and St. Louis Blues. I mean, I could just, can I wish for the sweet meteor of death? I don't need one of those teams to go any further. But what are
you
gonna do?
Oh shit, dude. Well, I think you know. I had the Stars and the Jets. You had the Stars and the Blues. I think it's going to be pretty good series, both of them. And I'm just excited to see some playoff hockey, man. And I'd love to have you back on for the second round if you have the time.
I'm sure I'm going to have plenty of time for the next couple of months. So that's out golfing. It's going to be a lot of relaxing and trying to recover a little bit.
Well, absolutely, man. And I wanted to ask you before we get off here is, you know, what was your biggest surprise in the Central this year? And then your biggest disappointment? I'll give you mine first, just so you kind of gauge it there. But I think, you know, my biggest surprise was Chicago doing as well as they did. And then my disappointment was, and maybe I made them a little specific just because you're on here and I wanted to hear your takes on this, is Q getting fired. I was very sad. I don't see how you let a guy like that go, and maybe you have a different thought of it being, you know, inside the team there a little bit and wanting to see it go a different direction. But I go, God damn, Q is a legend. Or is a legend.
Yeah, he is a legend. But you know what? After coaches' messages get old. They really do. And after a while, it seemed like maybe it was getting a little old. There's nothing against Q. I think – and I said this, you know, a long time ago, that I think Q should have been, if they were going to let him go, don't give him the vote of confidence at the end of the year.
Yeah.
When the season wraps up. And then really you gave him, what, a month into the season?
That's what I didn't like.
You booted him. I mean, they didn't do anything to fix anything. They signed Chris Kunitz, Brandon Manning, and Cam Ward.
Woo!
None of those three guys are going to do anything to really, you know, lift this team into a position where they were going to get into the playoffs. And the only reason they were even close to even sniffing the playoffs is four players had career years. Like, you couldn't have bet on that.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just so unlikely that four players were going to have career years, and that's exactly what happened. So, you know, they hung around a little bit, but it's also a testament to the Central Division really being all garbage. The whole Western Conference is actually garbage.
I agree, man, and I don't know why, but it's just like, fucking, I'll watch games at night and I'm like, I'm watching fucking Avalanche and Vegas play tonight. Like, this sucks.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, the team is going to win. And I picked this, you know, when we spoke in September, I said, Tampa's going to win. And they've shown nothing but that they're a dominant team.
Well, my friend, you're fucking wrong there, because they're going to lose in the first round to Columbus, baby.
To Artemi Panarin.
You're goddamn right. The only dude who showed up in the playoffs last year. We're coming back hard, fast. We're going to butt-fuck Tampa Bay to death.
Wow.
President's trophy curse, dude.
Yeah, you know, the only team that I'm really, like, I mean, I'm not a big Pittsburgh guy, but, you know, they are what they are. The only team that I'd really like to see, I want to see Boston bounce the Maple Leafs in the first round.
Oh, that's happening for sure.
Because just the chaos that's going to happen in Toronto.
They own Toronto, dude. They treat Toronto like they're like fucking little dungeon bitch, dude. What hasn't it been the last 2 years they've knocked them out? Or they go seven the first time and Boston lost.
They haven't been in for a while. I think Toronto last year was in. But I just I'm tired of hearing about Toronto constantly. Like, I know it's the center of the hockey universe, but, you know, and how they've done everything perfectly and they rebuilt and now they're this juggernaut and they won the draft lottery and all this nonsense. And it's like, you know, there's just because you have a few things roll your way doesn't mean that, that the red carpet's just going to roll out for you.
Yeah.
And in 3 years, you're going to win the Stanley Cup. And Edmonton is a great example of that.
Right. They've
had so much go their way.
Dude, that front office has to be fucking going, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
And that should make people respect what happened with, like, the Blackhawks and the Kings. You know, having those dynasty-type thing, you know, dynasty-type runs with the, you know, and the Blackhawks certainly weren't perfect.
And I think I'm excited, and I won't talk too much about it just because I'm going to, you know, on the Metro I'll get, or the Atlantic I'll get more into it. But I think I'd rather see Columbus play Tampa just because I've seen Columbus play Pittsburgh and Washington so much that I honestly – like their chances against Tampa, even though Tampa owns everyone. I understand that. I'm not retarded. I think confidence wise that Columbus can come in on a higher note than going, fuck, we're going to lose to Pittsburgh again, or we went up 2-0 against Capitals last year and shit the bed. But if history repeats itself, Columbus will lose first round and inevitably to the Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think is.
That's what they do. They've done it the last 3 years. So why not? Let's make it four.
If it wasn't for the fact that I had picked them, and I just wanted all transparency here, I picked the Capitals the year before to win the Cup, and they did. So I'd be 2 years in a row where I picked the actual champ.
And last year, my man, you were one of the few that I had heard that actually stood by that team and said, I thought they were dead. I thought it was time to sell the farm. And you were one of the few that I remember from last year going, this is going to be Ovi's doing it.
And I know nothing, like, it was nothing having to do with, like, inside information or, you know, the Puck and Hassel 2000 computer system here. It's basically my gut feeling. Like, I wanted to see Ovi win. I thought they were still a good team. I thought, you know, and they won. And the same thing with
and it was awesome when they won.
Yeah, and the same thing with Tampa, like. I think those guys deserve, you know, they're some really good players.
They are my second team that I think deserve it. I would love to see Joe Thornton get a cup, and I would love the Sharks to win. That's who I'm pulling for. But I think it's Tampa's to lose, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see San Jose win because of those guys, all those guys, Eric Carlson.
Fuck yeah. I want to see Brent Burns fucking ride an elk in his fucking farm with the cup, butt naked, fucking flying through the woods.
100%. But they can't keep the puck out of the net. They're one of the worst. Their goaltending is terrible, and how they didn't upgrade that at the trade deadline,
Shocking, right?
Like, that could almost be a fireable offense for Doug.
Shocking.
I know he's been pretty good lately, but the fact that he didn't go out and, like, pick up Jimmy Howard or something.
Who the fuck is their backup?
Aaron Dell, I think.
Yeah.
Aaron Dell, I think is his name.
Yeah.
I mean, he's okay, but he's, you know.
God, if you're going to make a run, though, if you would have added – because they added Nyquist. If you had Nyquist and Howard, I mean, good God, sir.
Yeah.
Good
if they could
God.
Just keep the puck out of the net, they would be up there with, you know, Tampa. If they could – you know, a Tampa-San Jose – final would have been amazing if San Jose could keep the puck out of the net.
Oh, and when I said if I'm being honest, I think Tampa's going to beat Columbus, I was fucking lying. Columbus is going to win, sweep, four games. I have to talk that way because if my Twitter feed is correct, everyone in Columbus would have preferred if we didn't make the playoffs at all, and I don't know how that is a real fucking thing. I always wonder if it's just like if there's a separation between like real hockey fans, like hockey fans that go to games, then hockey fans that like watch on TV, and then like Twitter hockey fans. Like I think there's like three groups of people that like the casual fan like watch it sometimes if it's on at the bar. The psychos who go see like Rockford play in fucking, you know, October, like December or whatever, and then Twitter people.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, honestly, if the Blackhawks are going to miss the playoffs, I would have rather them tanked and you know had a better chance at the draft lottery.
Yeah. I just know that if this team doesn't get it this year and you don't have a shot at it, what we just did was for nothing. At least have the opportunity to fail because we have no draft picks. Brett and Bob are leaving. It's going to be another dark 20 years.
Yeah, unfortunately. I would like to see Columbus do well, and they're kind of like our –
Well, I'll see you at the fucking parade, Gate, because it's going to be sick when they win the cup this year.
If they win the cup, I will come to that
parade. Dude, we'll fucking go for sure. I'll quit my fucking job.
Actually, honestly, I'll probably be in England at that point in time. But anyway,
fancy,
yeah.
Fancy. So, yeah, give me your surprise and disappointment real quick before we get out of here. Your biggest surprise. Well,
I'm going to – I'm kind of surprised that St. Louis didn't come out of the gate a little hotter. Mm-hmm. I thought they had a team built for a long, you know, a nice long solid run during the regular season. They start off really cold and they fired a coach and all that stuff. Bennington is actually a big surprise for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought St. Louis, maybe I'll redeem myself with all your St. Louis followers, but I thought St. Louis was going to be a little better to start off with. But I'm glad that they actually found their way. And, you know,
what do they call that? Like a secondhand or backhanded comment or something like that?
And Colton Parenko and Ryan O'Reilly, I love those guys as players. I'd kill to have them on the Blackhawks. So
I'm so happy for Craig Berube too, man.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's good to see him have some success.
Absolutely. So
I wouldn't, you know, again, I'm not going to hate on them if they do well in the playoffs. I think they could be a surprise.
I do too. I really do. I really do, and I wouldn't hate it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as disappointments go, I mean, it's hard, especially in the. I mean, it's a disappointment to me that San Jose didn't have better goaltending and didn't upgrade it. All the acquisitions they made, getting Eric Carlson, building up this super team, and then not having any fallback plan when their goaltending kind of failed them is kind of a disappointment to me.
Give me your central disappointment.
Central disappointment.
Probably the Blues being so good.
Yeah, I mean, really, everything kind of fell into place the way I thought it would.
It really did, didn't it? You kind of fucking nailed it right on the head.
Yeah, Minnesota ended up where I thought they would. The Blackhawks ended up where I thought they would. Maybe the fact that the Preds, weren't a little more dominant.
Yeah, I thought
the Preds and the because they finished so well the year before. I thought they had a good solid team from top to bottom. Rene was finally putting things together. UC Saros was playing good as a backup. They got a good defense. Ryan Ellis. I thought they were going to be a little bit better during the regular season. I didn't think they were going to be fighting for the division in the last days of and the same with the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, I actually picked the Winnipeg Jets to win the division.
Right.
And them not being able to keep the puck out of their own net, Connor Hellebuyck kind of coming back down to earth.
Yeah.
Them struggling. So I think the top two teams struggling like they did, I thought they were going to be a little bit better than they were. It's kind of a disappointment to me.
I think that's perfect, man. I do.
Yeah.
Well, again, Gate, I always appreciate your time. I always have a fucking blast talking to you, man. Have fun. Be safe in England. I hope Slayer plays all the old jams and all the new good ones, man. Do you get to meet up with Kerry at all when you're over there?
Probably. I mean, I'll probably see him over there.
You fuck. Probably. I'll probably.
I know, humble brag, right? Yeah. No, I'm going over to Download Festival in England this year. Slayer's playing their final UK concert there at it. Tool's going to be playing.
Shit.
I've always wanted to go to Download Festival. For 30 years, I've wanted to go to Download Festival. And my lady, she's wanted to do a celebration trip for getting her master's degree. So we decided we're going to go over there. We're going to see Download Festival. So we're going to go spend like two weeks over there. But we're going to wrap it up. The end of our trip is going to be 3 days at Download Festival, which is rock and roll heavy metal.
Wow. From
bottom. So we're going to go over there and enjoy ourselves. And we're going to do a little bit of the open air festival here in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be Tool playing. So we're going to see Tool here in Chicago, and then we're going to go over to the UK to see Tool and Slayer play. So that's kind of going to be our highlight of the year.
That's like a fucking, hey, Cody, what's your dream concert? Tool, Slayer. Like, that's fucking amazing, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I to be honest with you, I wish, and Rammstein just came out with their new song. I wish Rammstein was playing, because that would be the ultimate for me, to see Rammstein, Slayer, and Tool all play.
Have you seen Rammstein before?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've heard it's like a giant, like a fucking, it's like Kiss, but heavy.
I haven't seen that. I had never seen them up until 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, when they played open air here in Chicago. And everyone's like, you got to stay. And I really kind of lean towards the industrial metal kind of thing.
Uh-huh. You listen to Mortis at all?
A little bit.
Okay. I've been on a Mortis kick the last few months. It's been insane.
And, So, like I said, I've been kind of more on the industrial kick. So that's kind of right up my alley. And when I saw them, I was amazed at their show. The fire and the just they're so tight and they're so good and they put on such a good show.
Dude, they sound so much more scary just because Deutsch sounds like you. I don't know if it's Americans or the rest of the world who go like, oh, that's a scary language. the only clips I've ever heard of that were coming screaming out of Adolf Hitler's like voice. And it's like you like it makes you pay attention. Like you're up and like. And I remember in like elementary school, someone getting that first album and being like, "Oh, everything's different now. Like this is what we need."
Oh, they're amazing. And I've seen them a couple times, 2-3 times since. And the band, like they never disappoint ever.
Hell
if
yeah!
If you're a metalhead, you have to see Rammstein. It's just it's a must.
I missed them. The one chance I had to go, I didn't go, and I regretted it. So if next time they're in the States, I'm going to go.
Trust me, I've probably passed, you know, a dozen times before that.
Right.
Just because, you know, it's like, am I going to really enjoy it? I really didn't dig deep into their music. And am I going to really enjoy it? It's in a foreign language. Like, but when I went there and I saw that show, I was in love immediately.
The last time dudes went, like I knew it was like the Mutter tour. I mean, I was like in high school, and I was just like, man, and I should have just went because they went, and it was a fucking blast. And here I am now, this fucking old curmudgeon, not seeing shit. So I should have definitely gone.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem too. When they tour the U.S., they only tour like Chicago, Vegas, like big areas where you would have to really travel to see it. Unfortunately, or lucky for me, I live in Chicago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's easier for me to see those big tours coming through. Sometimes, you know, Ohio, sometimes they don't hit Ohio.
Right.
Maybe your closest one would be New York City or –
Well, Chicago's not that far.
Yeah, that's true. I've made the trip several times. So
yeah, I know a lot of dudes go see like At the Gates when they show up there and shit like that. So, well, Gate, tell the Biscuit Babies where to find you. And all the St. Louis fans, just send the hate mail to my DMs on Twitter. It's fine.
All the Preds fans in St. Louis, fans, even though I actually like their teams. But anyway, yeah, at Puck and Hostel on Twitter, at the Rink Official also is our official account for the whole website. It's www.the-rink.com. It's it's a dash. It's not D-A-S-H. It's a dash.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you guys have shit on Puck Hockey, right? There's some swag and merch and shit, right?
Yeah. Our actual official merch line is over at puckhockey.com. It's puckhcky.com. You can use the discount code THERINK, THERINK, get 10% off of everything.
Fuck yeah, dude.
You can use that for, like, you know, an overkill jersey. Or
I'm going to use it on the fucking Exodus Toxic Waltz flannel, dude.
Yeah.
That thing's the shit. What is it? It's the Rink 10?
It's actually just The Rink.
The Rink.
THERINK.
Okay.
10% off your orders.
I'm fucking using it, dude. Thank you.
Yeah. And that stuff's really cool. The Exodus stuff. Gary Holt, who's a member of Slayer as well.
One of the best guitar players I've ever seen live with my own eyeballs. No lie.
Yeah.
I never saw Slayer with Hanneman, so I've only ever seen them with Holt. And I remember I saw Exodus and 3 Inches of Blood like a long time ago. And I was like, fucking Gary Holt is like he is like Dimebag, Kerry King, like status, like a fucking shredder.
He is, and he oftentimes Exodus tours with Slayer, and he plays double duty.
Damn,
he does double shows.
God
he
damn,
he plays with Exodus, and then he comes back out for Slayer. And a Slayer show is not anything, you know. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not easy. You can't just, you know.
No, I almost died when I saw him. I was just getting crushed.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
If you just look at what Phil Demmel did, he had to fill in for Gary Holt. Gary Holt's father passed away, and Demo was like, "This rejuvenated my career. This was incredible." And Demo played like, I don't know, 5 shows with him or something.
Oh shit, dude, that's awesome, dude.
I'm just happy that I was able to see Slayer with Hanneman and Lombardo.
Yep, I wanted to, and it's one of them shows again. I didn't go, and now I'm sitting here like a fucking idiot.
Yeah,
because Ed Lombardo still is Slayer's drummer to me. No matter what happens, it won't matter. And I don't hate what's his name. Yeah.
Both, he's a good drummer.
He's amazing. He's just, I just like Lombardo better, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's all right. And Bo Stiff was their drummer for 10 years previously, right, in the 90s, when Lombardo left the first time. So.
Right. Well, Gate, I appreciate you, dude. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Anytime, man. I always got time for you.
All right. Thanks, buddy. All right, Biscuit Babies. He's back better than ever. Canada's most famous farmer. You've heard him on Fourth Line Voice. You've heard him on The Biscuit. If you're in Canada, you're eating his food. Farmer Rob in the house.
Hey, bud. How are you today?
I'm doing great, buddy. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. There's only one guy I think of when I think of, you know, when the Leafs make the playoffs and Atlantic Division. You got to think Farmer Rob.
Well, that's nice you're thinking me, bud. That's good.
So we're here, we're getting ready. You're playing, you know, your Leafs, Maple Leafs guy, it's on the silo. They're going to be playing Boston. Everything's getting fired up and ready. It pretty much broke down how I thought it was going to. I had Tampa winning it, you know, when we spoke in what would have been late September or whatever it was. And I thought your Toronto boys there would finish second. They finished third, and I thought the two wild cards would go to the Metro, but I didn't have it too far off. I had Buffalo, then Florida, then Detroit, and I think a big surprise for everybody was how goddamn good the Habs were this year.
Yeah, that was for me. If I had to pick my biggest surprise in Eastern Conference, is easily the success the Canadiens had.
I mean, what do you think happened there? They just got it all together. I mean, the talent was there, but there seemed to be problems, and they. Whatever was happening there, man, they fixed it, and they got guys in there that just like to win.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is the Claude Julien. I underestimated the kind of impact he could have. I mean, I think he squeezed that roster, got as much out of it as anybody could. He pressed all the right buttons, and they were a hard team to play against. They worked hard, and they had some big surprises too. Like, I'm a big Domi guy. But I'll admit, I didn't see him having just quite as good a season as he did. Even
I thought he'd be back to his old ways, but I didn't think he'd do what he did this year.
No, he's above and beyond. Like he really produced for them, and he was a leader, and he helped set the tone for that team. I think Dice had a big bounce back. He kept them in there, and Weber coming back too. I mean, he missed a lot of time last year, and. He's an all-world defenseman, and it helped immediately as soon as he came back too. So,
yeah, getting Shea Weber back doesn't hurt at all.
I was going to say, to finish with 96 points and not get in the playoffs, that's unheard of.
Oh, dude, they had me fucking sweating the last couple weeks, man.
Yeah, I was watching the race.
My God.
And that was back and forth. Columbus, after the trade deadline, they almost looked like the trades and the moves they made weren't going to pay off. And then they rallied and got their stuff together, so you were lucky, bud.
Dude, it was so close. And then I'm going, you're looking at the Habs schedule, and you're going, well, they're not going to win half of those games. Then they start knocking off fucking, you know, they go to Winnipeg, Winnipeg. They knock off Tampa Bay. And they start knocking these beasts down, and I'm like, oh, this is not – and Columbus is losing, you know, not even scoring goals. I'm like, oh, this is not good at all. And then the Hurricanes turn into these world beaters all of a sudden. And I'm like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. And, it was interesting to watch them this year. And like you said, Carey Price, I don't give a shit what anybody says, is still one of the best goalies in the world. I know people like to point out he makes $10 million, whatever he is, but – he's put that team on his shoulders multiple times, and this year he finally has some people around him. I think Domi going there and being in that big market, he doesn't want to just be known as Ty's son, I don't think. He wants to kind of, you know, make it like it'd be Ty and Max Domi. Like, he kind of wants to be up there in that place with him, and he's in a market now where people are going to notice him, and he really took it on the chin, and dude is a through-and-through competitor.
Yeah, he is. And I think, too, that he floundered a bit in Arizona, and this is a fresh start for him, and he must have trained hard and focused and looked at this as maybe not his last opportunity, but a really good opportunity to step up and establish himself in the NHL. and he certainly did that. I think in the poll there we touched on Max a fair bit.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He played junior here in London, and I'm a big fan. And
oh yeah.
So it shouldn't have surprised me, but it actually did. He even produced what I thought he would. So
yeah, I wanted him to be as good as he was this year. I didn't think he would be, and he reached my expectations and shattered them.
And he brings intangibles as well, and besides the offense, and he's gritty, he's a character guy, he's a leader, he drags teammates to battle with him, and there's a lot of things to like about him. And like I said, too, that roster, when you looked at it in the fall, there's a few names on it, but there was a lot of unknown commodities right there, and Julian, he put his lines together and put his lineup together, and he got the most out of him, so.
And I think a lot of people were down on him. You know, the draft is – it's not really important here in America, but up there, the draft is like the NFL down here. I mean, people really tune into that in Canada. And when Cotton Kanemi or whatever, went at the third pick, people were really down in Montreal. And, he even had a really good year. And, I agree with you. I think that would be my biggest surprise, not only in the Atlantic but in the Eastern Conference, would be how well the Montreal did.
I picked him dead last, and I was dead wrong.
I had him – I'm pretty sure I had him second to dead last. I had Ottawa underneath him, but still.
Yeah, I thought Ottawa maybe had with Duchesne and while some of the guys they parted with, I really thought they might have did a little better, but no, the Habs, they were a force all season long. And, I said in the fall, in the old days, there was a blood feud between Montreal and Toronto. And no matter what they did, I hated them and blah, blah, blah. But, now things are different in hockey. There's no blood feuds left. And so I just look at them basically as another hockey club. And their fans should be very happy and very proud of what they accomplished. And management, too, they turned the page there because it was a lot of gloom and doom. And like you say, that pick at the draft the fans didn't like it, and they made the right choice.
Yeah, the kid was great, and there's a lot of pressure like in that market and being in Montreal, and you got the spot. I mean, like in Toronto, it's Montreal's right up there with it. The spotlight's on you. You they're reporting on hockey every second there.
Yeah, and like the players can't go anywhere. Everybody knows them.
Right.
Like say for example, you're a Columbus fan. If you're a Canadian kid, you get drafted by Columbus. Yeah, if you're around the rink or, you run into a reporter somewhere, well, that's different. But the fans, you generally can blend in. We're in Montreal, Toronto, any of the Canadian markets for that matter. You're a celebrity wherever you go.
Oh, dude.
And when the team's going bad in Montreal, though, that pressure is amped up because everywhere you go,
absolutely,
there's somebody, like a guy like Farmer Rob, standing there saying, hey, what's going on, guys? Why are you losing? What's the deal? Blah, 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 right? And you can't get away from it.
Oh, yeah. I've always said you could see, Jody Shelley walk into the mall and nobody would – he could be butt naked and nobody would know who he is. I mean, in Columbus, it's like Panarin probably floats around and does whatever he wants and, he doesn't really get noticed. It's not that spot. Like we were listening to the radio the other day, the wife and I, and they were going over sports coverage and Columbus just clinched like that day. And they didn't even fucking mention it. And I was like, they were talking about the Browns' practice schedule. And I was like, well, that pretty much sums it up.
That's unfortunate as a hockey fan. That's too bad.
Ah, it broke my heart.
The one day of the year, one time in the season, they should have led with a Columbus story right there. Yeah. Like that story, and they didn't.
So. Yeah, clinched the playoffs for the third straight year. I mean, they're starting to make noise. And this is... and they're we'll go into that matchup right now. This is Columbus's best chance as far as talent goes, and then they get the worst matchup that nobody wanted. And you can, if you were like to break it down and go, if they don't go this year and nobody comes back, it might be some dark times coming Columbus's way. But I owe it to my team and all the pessimistic fans of Columbus to say that, fuck that. I think Columbus is going to win.
Okay. how many games do you think? I'm curious.
Seven.
Seven.
I think if they're going to, it's going to be seven. I don't think there's any way they can get it done under that.
I guess I would be, I'm a closet Columbus fan. I'm a big Boone Jenner guy. He comes from the area here, and
he's the best.
Josh Anderson played for London, and they got some pieces on that club that I like. But my biggest concern would be Bobrovsky and Net.
Yeah.
His playoff record has been so-so or sketchy. He has to be all-world Bobrovsky for them to beat Tampa to be in this series. Bob will have to stand on his head for them to give him a chance.
And so-so's being nice.
I'm not nearly so optimistic. I don't think that they can beat Tampa. I'd love them to, but I got to be honest, buddy, I can't see that happening.
It would be one of them things where you go, you know, the president's curse and all that jazz that they talk about. And the only thing that I'm happy about for them is I think if they look at the setups they could have been in as a team, they're going, fuck, we always lose to Pittsburgh. We were up 2-0 on the Capitals last year. We ended up losing to them. So maybe it's kind of a fresh start, and nobody is expecting them to do anything, and it's the first time since the trade deadline where they haven't had any expectations whatsoever.
That's right, and they do have some good players there, and the trades they made at the end, I like them all. I like Duchesne. There's a bit of a cloud hangs around Duchesne a little bit.
He
bounced around a bit, and there's some questions about his character, but on a short run like this, it's an ideal pickup for a team looking for offense, right?
Absolutely.
I'm a big McQuaid guy too. I mean, I think you guys got him dirt cheap, but he's a good hard-nosed playoff warrior type guy, right? So, and his angle too. He adds offense. That's a nice complimentary piece to what you already had there, right? So.
Yeah, and DeZingle, you know, went to school here at Ohio State, so he was, you know, familiar for at least hockey fans here. So it was good to see him. He was the surprise pickup, I thought, during that trade deadline. I was like, oh, once they got Duchesne, I was like, well, there's no way they get Duchesne and DeZingle. I was like, oh, shit. I mean, Jarmo, Kekalainen and really pushed all his chips in and went, you know, if it's going to happen, this is going to be it. But I think they were expecting a way better standing than getting that second wild card and then having to play their way out of the Atlantic.
Yeah, and they just seem to struggle a little bit after the deadline to get all the pieces in place and get the guys to figure out the system a little bit.
Wasn't it weird? Was it weird to watch as because I'm close to the team. Was it weird, you know, being a Canadian and seeing what they did and the moves they made and going, well, what's happening? Or like, have you?
Well, I when you change over that much of your roster and add that many pieces, they got to learn the system, right? And Tortorella's the kind of coach that there's no margin for error, or there's no, like, he sat McQuaid a couple of nights, if I'm not mistaken, and he said it's just he's got to learn the system, he's got to learn to fit in and what we expect of him here and what where he has to be and what he has to be doing. So but yeah, and true, the guys come in the room and they're new, and there's always most teams just have one big player or even not even one big player, and it takes a bit of a getting used to, right? New city, you know, maybe the wife's in the still where you were, or the girlfriend, and you're living out of a suitcase in a hotel. And like I say, the good news is they do seem to have settled in here lately, and they are looking good.
Yeah, it was weird that it took them so long. And like you said, Tortorella is now he's a very unconventional coach. Like he's learning now that he can't scream at dudes. It's he's probably got a lot of shit for scratching Quaid because, you know, they just got a trade. You get McQuaid in and you're going, well, you're not ready to play. I can't put you in. And I'm sure upper management's going, what the fuck are you talking about? Get that guy on the ice. But Tortorella he'll live and die by the sword. That's for sure. He's never been one to turn the cheek and, you know, not say what's on his mind and do what he thinks is best for the team despite what anyone thinks.
Yeah, and I describe it as the kind of guy, he doesn't take the easy road ever. He doesn't bend on issues just to suit management or ownership or anything else. He's John Tortorella, and he does his thing his way, right?
Yes, he sure does.
I actually really like Torts that way. That's very rare in today's game. Everybody's PC, and, you know, everybody likes to get along with everybody, and he tells it like it is. It's refreshing, if nothing else. So.
Yeah, I agree too. And it's that PC culture is really huge in the Columbus area because of the university being there, and all the kids are, you know, thinking for the first time. So all they do is read Twitter, and whatever they say is kind of, you know, the god. So I struggle with being a huge fan in the fan base where I'm like, man, I don't have fucking anything in common with any of these fans, but I love Tortorella, and I think the team underachieved, and it would, you know, we talked before the show about, you know, disappointments, and I would, and it doesn't fit into the Atlantic, but they have to play their way out of the Atlantic. So they would be, you know, one of my biggest disappointments with after those trades, just struggling to even score goals. And it's going to be a hard, hard task to get by Tampa Bay, especially when Tampa Bay, I would assume, would be the favorite to not only go to the final, but to win the final.
And the fact Tampa Bay was so dominant all season with everybody.
All year.
You know, they'd have a big game coming up with a team that was surging, you know, just whoever. And they'd play, and then they'd squash them.
Yeah.
And that's just how their season went. I mean, they ran over everybody at points in the season for sure, so... I'm going to take Tampa Bay in five. I know you don't want to hear that. I'm sorry. I will add one caveat, though. Like I said, if Bob Roski stands on his head, I mean, he is a good enough goaltender. He can win a series. He can steal a series.
He needs to do it.
Yeah, and he's got to show that. And, he, you know, this might be the year he does that as well, because he stands to make a big pay this summer as a UFA.
Yep.
And if he doesn't stand on his head or he looks ordinary, it's gonna hurt what he makes in his next contract for sure.
Yeah. If he's anything below extraordinary Bob, the two-time Vezina Trophy winning Bob, they lose. I'm not delusional, but I think you're right. I think he is the key to even winning a game against this Tampa Bay team.
No, and that's playing for a contract too. He knows this is his chance to cash in. Like
he could be looking at Carey Price money.
A bit more for him if he could drag the Blue Jackets through a couple series on his back. So you never know. I guess is what I'm saying. But Tampa was just so damn dominant all year. I can't see them not get rolling over.
Now you've watched hockey forever, right? And you've seen teams like this. Does it seem like a story you've seen before where, you know, even they matched the regular season wins of that 95-96 Red Wings team, and that team didn't win the cup?
Yeah, that's right. No one, and every year there's a Cinderella team or a team that knocks somebody off, right, and comes, out of nowhere, especially now with half the league not making the playoffs. Or,
yeah.
You know, it's different than in the old days, but there is always Cinderella teams, but this series I think it's just too much difference between the two clubs. But like Tampa Bay, if you sit down and look at them, there's just not a lot of weaknesses there. They got depth, they got stars, they got offense, they play defense, they got probably the Vezina winning goalie in Vasilevskiy.
He deserves it.
So. Yeah, so they're a tough matchup, a formidable, and I just can't see them Columbus squeaking by.
Yeah, I disagree full-heartedly. No, I just want them to win. I just want them to win so bad, man. And I made this algorithm. I was telling Gatekeeper earlier for the Central Division that I got the new Beta 3000 Biscuit computer. And if it doesn't work this first round, I'm burning it down. But after tearing it down, Tampa Bay has – I have nine things that I think are important to winning. And it was – yeah, Tampa Bay had six over Columbus and three. So it my gut says Columbus, but realistically, and then the new Biscuit beer computer tells me Tampa Bay is going to win.
Well, as a fan, though, that's what we do, right? We cheer for our team. And,
damn right, buddy.
Even you're not happy with certain elements of their game or their coaching staff, or you still, when it comes down to it, you don't want to see them lose. This is what it's all about. You play all year, you want to see them do well, and you always half the glass is either half full or half empty. And if you're a true fan, it's always half full.
You're goddamn right. That's a perfect way to put it, and that's why I wanted them in the playoffs. Because if I'm right now, I wouldn't even. Well, I got nothing. They have no chance. But right now, there's still a chance, and it's not a good chance, but it's possible.
That's right.
The next matchup is the Maple Leafs in Boston, and they went at it. Was it the two previous years or just last year that these two teams have faced each other?
Just last year, but the year before they played Washington and went in six, I believe it was.
Yeah, that's right.
And then a few years before that, though, they had a series with the Bruins when Kessel and that crew was together, and that was the first series they got crushed in. James Reimer was in net, and
Reimer.
Yeah. So yeah, they've had a couple of bad playoff series with the Bruins recently, I guess you'd say. So.
And how do you feel? You know, as a diehard Maple Leaf fan going into this right now, you know, they seemed a little weird at the last 2 weeks. And then, you know, I tune into, you know, 31 Thoughts every now and again or Bob McKenzie's podcast. And they're just talking about firing Bob Babcock. I'm like, well, it's almost playoff times. What the fuck are we talking about here?
Yeah, I'm a big Babcock fan, right? And if anybody follows me on Twitter, I tend to maybe over support him at times, but, My take on Babcock is that unless who are you going to replace him with that's
right.
Going to maybe do a better job? And the one thing that always stood out right from the get-go is how he handles the Toronto market, the Toronto media, I mean. And it's they show up at the rink, there might be 25, 30 different reporters there, and he's one step ahead of that stuff all the time. And, there seems to be two camps developing. You got the analytics community and Leafs Nation that loves Dubas, and then you got a lot of old guys like me that kind of tend to support the coach and are happy with some of the moves that Dubas made and how the team's constructed. So there's this back and forth, you know, all the time between us. And no, I don't think Babcock's going anywhere. And in fact, I really don't see even they get swept by Boston. I know he gets fired. I really do.
I would be surprised, too, because who are you going to hire?
Well, I said, I heard Quenville got hired today in Florida, it looks like it.
Right,
Outside of him, I don't think there's a coach available that I would rather have than Babcock. And I might be in the minority there, but if you're going to bring in a young, unproven coach into the Toronto market, the media alone would be a full-time job for a guy that doesn't have any experience dealing with the media. And some guys are laid back and they can handle that and it doesn't bother them. And maybe everybody likes to point to Keith, who's the Marlies head coach. But what they don't realize is Babcock sets out the game plan for the Marlies and the style of game they play. And so then it's seamless. When a guy gets called up in the American Hockey League, he knows the defensive regiment and what they're doing. And it's the same at both levels. And so part of the success they had with the Marlies last year, they won the Calder Cup, was the way they played the game, and that was the style set out by Babcock. But anyway, the fans that hate Babcock don't want to hear that stuff, so anyway.
Yeah, and everybody hates a coach unless you're winning the game, and what's surprising is Toronto's so good, so young, I don't know how you could complain at this point.
Well, and I've been watching the Leafs since the early 70s. I was very small when I started, you know, but at the same time, I've seen so many bad coaches come through the market over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that couldn't deal with the media, guys that just were underqualified. And I mean, he's good at what he does. He's a great coach. And, you know, then the fans will point at the fact he didn't have a whole lot of success later in years in Detroit. Well, the team was on the downward spiral later in those years. Like the players, the core of the team was aging and they didn't do a good job replacing some of the pieces. Then they'll say, oh, well, the success he had on the world stage was because the team, like with Team Canada, was because the team was loaded. Well, there's been all kinds of coaches that have coached Canadian teams on the international stage that didn't have success. Like Mark Crawford comes to mind for the One Olympics. So that's not a given either. Dealing with egos the younger players, it's a different mindset. And if you look at the Oilers' blueprint, they've been drafting, but not really developing that well. Now McDavid and Dreisaitl are nice pieces, but they've had a lot of kicks at the cat, like a lot of high draft picks, the guys that just haven't panned out. And Toronto's did a pretty good job at keeping the young players developing, and that's on Babcock, and he keeps the Eagles in check and keeps those guys on the straight and narrow. Like, we don't hear many stories or any stories about off-ice issues with these guys.
No.
And And with the media attention that's in Toronto, that could start tomorrow with the wrong guy running the show.
Yeah. So besides the Nylander, you know, him holding out the sign, besides that, you really, all it's been is them scoring a shit ton of goals and pseudo struggling on defense. That's all you really hear.
No, and like, you know, they say, well, you know, they just have those young lads and Tavares, but at the same time, like Mitch Marner, he slowly gets better every year.
Oh God,
you know, he's 3 years in. Well, what if he takes another jump next year?
Yeah.
You could say it's natural evolution, and he would have did it on his own. But I think if you ask Marner, he'd say that Babcock's a big part of that.
I would agree too, and I think he got this team to where they're at quicker. They've reached their a potential that they're at now quicker than they would have anywhere else. I think, or with any other coach, I guess I mean. And I think I agree. I'm in that camp too. I'm not a huge Babcock guy, and I think that I think that he is the right fit there. And I would be, you'd be hard pressed to find a better dude for that job.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm on the record. I'm not a big Dubas guy. You know, I'm willing to let the, he's the GM now, and I'm a fan, so you got to let him do his job and whatnot. And I'm not a real big fan of some of the moves that he's made. Like, I like Jake Muzzin. Like, I think that was a fantastic pickup.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this team does, and I've touched on this in the fall, I mean, it's soft, very soft, and the back end needs work. But like you just said a minute ago, this team improved rapidly, and they were drafting young talented forwards, and they didn't have time to address the back end, and young defensemen that they have drafted, it takes longer for them to develop, right?
Yeah.
So they're in a bit of a catchy spot. They've got a couple of good young defensemen with the Marlies, but it's going to take 2 or 3 years for those guys to reach the NHL. So they're in a bit of a pickle that way.
But, yeah. I'd like to get in a room with Dumbass and get like a case of beer, like a couple 2-4s maybe, and really see eye to eye with him and see what he's about. See if he's like this nerd that I think he is, or see, you know, it's hard to put a finger on him, but I don't like him so far either, but there's just something about him where I'm like, he just seems like a prickly little, like, fuck. I don't know the guy at all. And the moves, I don't look at that closely, but I'm just like, God damn, dude, can't you get like any kind of edge in the team? Do something. The Muzzin was a huge transaction.
Yeah.
He nailed that one.
Yeah, he did. And that was a good move. I mean, that's kind of the standard. You have to go up a prospect and a pick. And, you know, and a first rounder, I mean, to get a good, solid defenseman, they give up a couple of prospects. But having said that, I think the impact Muzzin could have in the next 2 seasons, and hey, maybe he'll re-sign here beyond that. You never know.
Absolutely.
He has a bit of an edge, and he's pretty sound defensively, and he brings a little offense. And his playoff success he had in L.A. is something that'll help a younger club too, right?
Absolutely. That's one of them stats you can't measure. He's been there before and deep into it.
I just wish they'd had a couple of wingers that were a little heavy.
Yeah, I agree.
And play, they have a lot of trouble. They're a good team scoring off the rush, but they don't play a real strong cycle game. Like, they don't win as many board battles as you'd like. And getting the puck out of their own zone, too. They have a habit of blowing the zone and do the stretch pass. There's things like that. But, you know, I think, like we just said earlier, they are ahead of expectations on the timeline.
Yeah.
And maybe those pieces aren't available right now. And, you know, they're developing from within. But at the same time, I don't see those guys in the farm system either. So.
Well, what worries me about this matchup is the things you just said there, the, you know, getting in the corners and playing that board play. The things that Toronto are, you know, mediocre or bad at, Boston thrives in.
Yeah. And another thing, too, in the defensive zone, when a good team cycles the puck against the Leafs, they have a hard time breaking the cycle. And their defense, it is what it is, but there's a lot of stick checks, and there's not a lot of guys removed from the play with body checks. And so, I mean, I guess that, you know, they keep the stick in the lane and try to keep separation, but that part of the game is a big concern. And they have had injuries, and I think Muzzin's been playing hurt. I think he got some food poisoning, missed a game here. But at the same time, like, Jake Gardner's been hurt. He's not a favorite of mine. Lights have been dreadful this season. But there is an absence of any sort of physicality on the blue line, and that really worries, especially against the Bruins. I would think that the first thing they'll do in the first period is somebody will accidentally on purpose fall on top of the goaltender or go through the crease and catch him and take a penalty or do whatever just to get him off his game, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that was the thing Columbus was struggling with until McQuaid came. We had no ball. There wasn't a dude with a ball sack that wanted to use it. And then we got one. We were soft as the Maple Leafs were, and then they got a dude in there who has the experience in the playoff. I think McQuaid was a Tortorella going, please get me somebody, some guy. And I think it was McQuaid.
Yeah, and like I say up front too, you got guys that they're not tough guys, but like I'm a big fan of Josh Anderson. I think he's
my favorite
physical player. If you know what I mean, he can score and skate and finish his check, and he can throw when he has to. And he's one of my favorites in the league, actually.
Absolutely, he is a pure beauty. He is probably, as this team stands now, you know. I'm a huge Bjorkstrand guy just because from watching him in Cleveland, and Josh Anderson's right up there with him too. That because he's thrown, he's done what he had to do, and he's a big guy, plays hard, goes to the net. He's just fun to watch. Josh Anderson is.
Yeah, and that physical element just in the playoffs is just so important.
Yeah, it's an untangible.
And like here with my Leafs, that's the one thing, and it's been a ongoing thing all winter. They just don't answer the bell physically. I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I forget the team they're even playing, but Tavares was on the edge of the blue paint, and it might have been Buffalo. I don't know. He got a cross check at the top of the pants, and it was so hard. He did a face plant right on the ice right behind the goalie, and he laid there. Nobody did anything.
God.
Nobody even skated over and gave the guy a cuff or speared him or said something or anything, and I hate that stuff.
You gotta go out and scream at the chickens when that happens.
Yeah, it is unacceptable. And same thing. Anybody touches your goaltender, I mean, that's
one I don't get. That happens
generation to generation. You do not touch another team's goaltender, or there's hell to pay. They just sit there and watch him pick himself back up again and put his cage back on. And oh well, that's just the way we play, I guess. So.
That's the biggest one that gives me the shits, man, is you don't touch the fucking goaltender. Everyone knows that, and it happens all game long.
Yeah.
And nobody does shit about it. Like you said, they'll get their bucket knocked off, and they'll go pick it up, pick their mask up, put it back on, and he's looking around going like, that's like the number one, don't let anyone touch your goalie. No one touches your goalie.
No, it is what it is. It's a big worry, especially the Bruins. I mean, they got some greasy forwards like Marchand that'll have no problem.
No, he'd love to.
You know, yeah, that's for sure. That's part of what we can expect going forward.
Krejci. I mean, that's what I think the biggest thing there is, and when the Biscuit computer breaks it down, I think Boston is going to do it, and I think they'll do it in five, and I don't think the Maple Leafs will look bad, but they're gonna the things that the Maple Leafs aren't good at doing is gonna show hard.
Yeah, that's a pretty good assessment. I guess we look big picture. I think if you look at the Bruins, I think they have more margin for error. Like if everything isn't going right, if they're not all their offense isn't clicking, you know, at 90%, and you know if they have an injury or two, or if Rask isn't quite as good as Anderson, they can still win. But I think for the Leafs to beat the Bruins, Anderson has to be, like Bobrovsky, he has to be by far the best goalie. And the offense has to click. They have to be scoring. They can't have somebody like, say, a Matthews go, you know, in a 6 or 7 game series with 3 points.
He's about due to get hot again, though, I think. Looking at his, you know, how he's always, like, scores a lot, but he started the season off blazing hot, got hurt, and then I think he, you know, as an American is, I love them. I love the kid. So I hope he has an amazing series, and man, when you think of Tuukka Rask, dude, if he doesn't show up, Toronto has a hell of a shot.
They do, but at the other side of that, Halak has had a great season.
Yes, he has.
I kind of crapped on him in our preseason review there. That I didn't. He had a bad year last year, and I thought that they made a mistake picking him up because I didn't think he had anything at this point to offer. His numbers are really close to Rask.
Yeah, I was shitting on him all year until like 2 months ago, and I was like, man, he's just really good. I can't shit on him anymore.
No, and he's maybe found the right situation. And one thing I will say about the Bruins too, they ran into a lot of injuries this season, especially on the back end.
A ton.
They showed great resilience, and they fought through that. And I think that one time they had five regulars on the blue line.
Yeah.
Like, most teams, that cripples them. You go five off your depth chart, you're at 11 on your depth chart. They're American Hockey League players, right?
Yeah.
And it shows that Cassidy did a nice job. I thought last year in the first round, I thought he out-coached Babcock. Begrudgingly, I admitted that, and that can't happen either. I mean, Babcock's got to get certain matchups. He's got to keep some guys away from certain guys, and we'll see what he comes with. I think at least the one strength they do have, they can bring three offensive lines, and the Bruins are really more of a two offense lines.
Yeah, if not one.
If Kadri, Nylander, and whoever they have on that other wing can bring offense from the third line, and then you have Tavares and Marner on one, and then you have Kapanen and then Matthews and Janssen on the second line, it's hard to watch that many, and they have Krejci and Bergeron, who are very strong centers with a lot of experience. But at the same time, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I mean, if they don't get offense off that third line, it doesn't really make any difference. So Nylander's been, at best, very, very disappointing this season. So
yeah.
seven goals and making $7 million next
time. Wouldn't that be nice?
That's not good math, put it that way. $1 million a goal.
No. So how do you think it breaks down? How do you think it goes?
Like you with the Blue Jackets, I mean, I can't call against my club. I just can't do that as a Leafs fan. I mean, once the puck drops, best case, the Leafs will win in seven, and they'll exercise the demons, the Bruins, and get going.
I think so, too. And that's, like you said, I'm a homer. I'm not going to pick against my team. It's not going to happen. But I'm also... do a podcast and, have to do whatever, but it's, I'll be real about it. I think, like you, if Columbus does it, it's going to take seven games to do it. And I think if Toronto does it, it'll take seven games to do it too.
Yeah. Like I said, they have no room for margin for error. The one big thing, if they got a game and they're up 3-1 going into a third, they can't let Boston back into that game and lose it. Or if, they're leading in game six and they have a chance to close out a series, they can't let the veteran team like the Bruins back into the game.
You know who'd be nice to have right now in Toronto is fucking Matt Martin. God.
Yeah. Don't put that up on Twitter because the Leafs fans, the analytics fans will come after you and lynch you. But
especially when Matt Martin goes into Pittsburgh and starts fucking shaking shit up in New York too. Watch it. Matt Martin don't give a shit, dude.
No, I mean, a couple weeks ago, he fought Chair.
He
didn't win, but he didn't get knocked out. And you tell me that those guys on the island didn't love him for doing that.
You're damn right, dude. You're damn right.
Every guy in that bench went to him after that game, I'll guarantee it.
Oh, he didn't buy dinner that night, that's for sure.
No. He's had a great year.
Dude, they've had a great year.
He's put up a handful of points, and his usual deal with body checks, I mean, he's probably in the, I haven't looked recently, but last time I did, he was in the top five in the league again, and doing all the things that you would like, as a Leaf fan, we need a player or two like that to play that physical role, but for whatever reason, they decided to move on from him, so...
Where they fucked him up, too, is he's like, what's his dick from the Bible who couldn't cut his hair? That's what happened to him in Toronto, dude. They cut his hair. Delilah cut his hair, and he was fucked.
Samson Delilah.
Yeah, Samson. Lou Lamoriello cut his hair off, and he was fucked. And he gets his hair back, and he starts fucking killing again.
Speaking of Lamoriello, I gotta do a little rant here real quick on him.
Go.
I absolutely hate the negativity through at him as he's going out the door by Leaf fans. I mean, he came in, he put a program in place here in Toronto, and it succeeded, and it set them up, and it's put them where they are right now. And
absolutely.
Look what he did on the island. I mean,
God, dude. I mean,
the guy is a great general manager, and he did a great job. And my hat's off to Lou. I mean, he at his age, he doesn't need any of this stuff, and he just goes on and his teams win. And good on him. So
too. Like you said, he went to New York and turned a team that I thought would be dead last in the fucking Metro, and look at him. They finished second.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He picked up Leonard, And I threw him out for dead as well.
Everyone did.
He looked so bad in Buffalo last year, and he had off-ice issues. And when they signed him, I kind of chuckled. I thought, well, there's a mistake. And it wasn't. I mean, no. He had a fantastic year in Greece. I think they got the Jennings Trophy for lowest goals against, if I'm not mistaken. So,
did they really?
Yeah.
Well, good for them. Good on them.
I mean, that's good for Lou and
well, that's good for anyway. A guy. That's great for a guy like Leonard who has, you know, the mental issues on off the ice to whatever program he's on now to get that reassurance. And I always liked him. When he was good, but he would fucking – and it's from a mental disease he has or whatever. He's, you know, like, got it diagnosed, and he's – whatever meds he's on or whatever he's doing to get himself right, he has figured it out, man.
Yeah, I think he had some alcohol issues as well, and he got himself right up and And like you said, good on him, because he always had the talent to be a number one and be a great goalie in the league, but he had to sort some of that stuff out. And you know, a little bit of that, like, this was probably his last chance.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. I agree.
You know, if he went in there this year and if he crapped out or fell off the wagon or just wasn't prepared, he wasn't going to get any more chances at the NHL. So,
dude, I had him on my fantasy team this year. Just found out yesterday I'm the fucking champion of my fantasy league. So everyone from my fantasy league listening, y'all can suck it. You suck at fucking fantasy hockey. I'm the god. I'm the king. Went to the championship last year. Won it this year. I'll see whoever in the championship next year.
Good for you, guys. Congratulations,
dude. Dude, I was fucking running around my house this morning. You would have thought I had fucking won a new car, dude.
Well, that's good stuff, man.
So you got Toronto going in seven. Who do you see going into the final as you look at this whole bracket as it sits right now? Who do you see, Farmer Rob, from the East Coast and the West Coast, and ultimately raising that cup over their arms and being the champion this year, 2019.
Who am I taking out of the East? Is that your question?
East or West? Who do you got going, and who do you got winning it?
Yeah, well, I'd like to say the least, but realistically, I can't see them going through Boston and Tampa Bay. So, if I had to pick a team out of the East, I'd got to go with Tampa Bay. They're just so deep and so strong. And nonetheless, that's a good question. I mean, there's some good clubs in the West, and because of our interview here, I was under the impression I wouldn't be talking about the West. But if I had to pick a club out of the West, I really like Winnipeg.
Okay.
And I know they've been struggling or kind of floundering a little bit, but there's a lot to like about that hockey club. And I like their back end, and I like Hellebuck in the net, and they got lots of weapons up front. So, and on top of that, they play a heavy game. Like I love Buffalo, and they don't mind taking a few penalties to send a message, and they'll kill them and then go on and beat you. So,
like a true Canadian, he's got to put at least one Canadian team in the final there.
Well, I hope so. And I'm calling for an upset in the Pittsburgh Islanders series. I'm taking the Islanders in that one.
Ooh, I love it, dude. I would love that, man. I think they're going to play a low-scoring, gritty game, and I, like I said, I think Matt Martin's going to be a factor in there, and there's some Pittsburgh's got to get a fire lit under him again, I think. I think Sidney will get one more before he retires, and that's it, and it's not going to be this year.
No, I don't think this year either. And like that Islanders team, they play a heavy style of hockey too, and I watch them, off and on. Like, that's a team I like to watch play because they play the game the way
Scott Mayfield, fucking Ross Johnston. I love those guys.
Yeah, that Casey Cizikas, too, 20 goal scorer on the fourth line.
He's dirty.
They're in your face, Clutterbuck.
I agree with you. I like Islanders games too. It kind of suits my style. I agree with you there, man. They're fun to watch.
Yeah, if I had to pick a sleeper team out of the East, I would definitely go with the Islanders. I mean, and you've got Trotz and Lou there. There's the two guys that, even though the team hasn't, as a team, you know, advanced in the playoffs yet, they haven't did that. They got leadership there that knows what it's all about too.
Well, you heard it here first. He says the Blue Jackets are going to win the Stanley Cup this year. Everybody's fucking excited. Farmer Rob, dude, I appreciate your time, man. It's always a fucking pleasure talking to you. The insight you bring, and You know, I love talking to you on Twitter all the time. Tell the Bisky Babies where to find you on there, because if you're listening right now and you don't follow Farmer Rob and you are Canadian or you're a Maple Leaf fan or you like aggressive hockey or fights, you're an idiot.
Well, you can find me at FarmerRob17. That's my handle on Twitter. So
you're the best, man. And thanks again, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, bud.
Anytime, buddy.
All right, anytime here, too. Just let me know when you need me. Thanks, buddy.
Cheers, bud. All right, Bisky Babies, here to help me break down the teams trying to play out of the Pacific. The originator and runner and owner of Sinbin.Vegas, Ken Bulkey. How we doing, bud?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. You know, we were just talking. It's heating up out there in Vegas. It's actually getting, like, feasible to go outside in Ohio now, so it's been nice to get the kids out and, you know, just be outside because it's been so fucking cold.
It hasn't been that cold here, but it was cold for us this winter.
My uncle was just out there this past weekend, and my aunt bought Aerosmith tickets for $400 and was scammed.
Nice.
Scammed.
Oh, that's not good.
Dude showed up at the venue or wherever they had their – they have a residency or something like that, I think, and just, nope, these are not real tickets.
I think they were at Park MGM, yeah.
Oh, how brutal is that?
That's rough. I just recently got scammed, but I protected myself. I used PayPal, so the scammer got fucked on the whole thing rather than me, so it's good for me.
It seems like
for Mumford & Sons.
There's so much going on out there that people probably get scammed fucking left and right.
Yeah, people are assholes. That's the problem. This dude called me, too.
Really?
He calls me to see if I'll put the money through on PayPal, and then keeps me on the phone for about 10 minutes claiming he's trying to get back into his Ticketmaster account, and then hangs up and doesn't respond to me. I'm like, oh, okay, buddy.
So how does that work with PayPal? You go, hey, I bought Mumford & Son tickets on PayPal, and they're not real. PayPal finds that guy?
So there's two different ways to send money on PayPal. There's goods and services, and then there's friends and family.
Right.
If you send it via friends and family, there's no fees, and it's gone. If you do it, it's gone. Like, there's nothing you could do. If you do goods and services, it holds the money until you claim that you've gotten the whatever you bought, and until you've gotten it, they don't get the money. So then you just say, I didn't get it, and then they take it back.
Well, shit. Because I know some people, like, if they buy merch, like we have records of the band I was in, and they'll be like, you know, send it friends. You don't have to pay the service, but I could just keep their money if I wanted.
Correct.
Damn, that's brutal, man.
Granted, I mean, my money's probably going to be this was last week or 2 weeks ago or so that I went to the show, and I still don't have my money back. So it'll be a minute, but it'll probably be 30 days, 40 days before I get my money back, which is annoying, but it was well worth it for the price that I was trying to pay for those tickets.
Yeah, and you get it back, dude. You know what I mean?
Right. So I was never in danger like your aunt?
Yeah, my aunt. Yeah, she's fucked out of $400.
Yeah, that sucks.
And you don't get to see Aerosmith. It's like, oh, dude, that just sucks.
Well, yeah. See, I feel like now I'm just bragging because I did end up seeing Mumford too.
Got your money back. Got to see the concert. Got my money that I got scammed for. Oh shit, dude! I won't tell her any of that.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, I mean, I would tell her to use PayPal. Like, that's a better way to do it. She probably did Zelle or something.
I don't know. I'll have to ask her. That's what I was wondering. I was like, what fucking site were you on? Where like. Because even getting, like, tickets for hockey games now, that, like, will call shit, like, it and having, like, your ticket on your phone, it makes me feel weird.
It's rough. Yeah, I mean, they've made scalping tickets a hell of a lot harder, which is frustrating because there are still people out there that are legitimate and will sell tickets. And that's the problem I have is, like, everybody gives these sites a bad rap, you know, Craigslist and Facebook and all that. But to be honest, there are people out there that are trying to sell tickets. And we'll go through it with the playoffs again. I mean, here we go again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. I wanted to ask you, I watched Jeopardy with my wife during the week, and there was a dude on there from Vegas, and he is a professional sports gambler. And she's like, well, that seems crazy. I was like, I don't think it's that uncommon of a job to be out in Vegas and to make money off sports betting. That's not that uncommon out there, is it?
Yeah, I mean, people do it. The interesting thing is most people don't do it from actually winning games. They do it from selling their picks, which I'm not personally a big fan of that. Because
that seems like bullshit.
Yeah, if you're going to sell your picks, if you need me to buy your picks, why don't you just bet more and win? Like, that's what I've never understood.
So what?
If you're so good at picking games, just bet more, dumbass. Like, why do you need my money?
Yeah, so what, they get in early on the odds and then sell those odds off to someone else?
No, so what they'll do is, and this is what's great about the racket, is what they'll do is they'll create accounts, and then they basically say, we'll give you a free pick, and they pick both sides of a game. So say, like, they would pick, the one account would pick the Sharks, one account would pick the Golden Knights. And all the people that signed up for the quote-unquote free pick through the Golden Knights would be like, holy shit, this guy's amazing. He gave me a free pick. He won. And now you pay for his service. And then he just gives you whatever random picks. And I'm sure he's trying to win because you'll keep paying the longer he wins. But he's already got your money.
Yeah. That's fucking weird.
And my thing is, like, what are you doing? Like, if you're so good at gambling on sports, why are you making it into a business where you have customers? Why don't you just bet on sports? Like, everybody knows
exactly.
The worst thing in the world are customers. That there's nothing worse than people. Like, everybody hates people. They're the worst. That's a fact. They suck.
Yeah.
Every person is awful. So yeah. Why would you want to get into a business where you actually have to deal with people when you could just do it without dealing with people?
Especially if you were like not like fluid at one time and then did it that way for a little bit and then shut that shit down and then just start going with that money you made off of that.
That's probably what happens.
Yeah, that's got to be it. Because like you said, people suck. And if you're dealing with their money too, like a lot, that's got to be even worse than just like making them a cheeseburger or something.
Correct. The worst. If you lose them $500 because you told them that the national championship's a lock, that Texas Tech's going to win, and then they don't, well, now your house is probably under siege.
Does it get pretty wild out there for the March Madness?
The first weekend is nuts. Like, I always go down to – I usually go down to Westgate and watch there, the Superbook, mm-hmm. and that's just insane. But then it kind of tapers off. Like, the Final Four is not that big a deal because it's two games, not that big.
And, upsets.
Great. Yeah, I mean, even then, like, it's not great to watch an individual game in a sports book. What makes a sports book great is the ability to watch four games at the same time.
Yeah,
March Madness first weekend's built for that.
Absolutely. Now, we're here to do the Pacific, right? So I didn't speak to you before the season. You'll be very disappointed to hear who I had in first place, but who did you have going, if you did, preseason picks, who'd you have and how did you look at the Pacific going into this season?
So I probably should lie to you, but I'm not gonna.
Okay.
I picked Arizona.
To win it?
Yeah, and I actually have the ticket over there on my counter. It was 80-1. I bet Arizona. At 80-1, and I thought they had as good a shot as any. I thought the division was awful. I still don't think the division's great, but I think it's better than what I thought going into the season. I didn't necessarily expect Vegas to win it. I thought San Jose had a pretty good shot. I expected Calgary to be a borderline playoff team.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd run away with the division like they did.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes me feel better because I had Coyotes at 4 in the preseason, and people were giving me shit for that. And I was like, they're not really that bad of a team. Like,
no,
you said, I wasn't too convinced any other way besides, like, I thought the Sharks were going to be really good, and I thought Vegas would be, you know, second or third in the division. But I had and this will be just as bad as a Coyotes pick, but way worse. I thought the Kings, if they would have been healthy, would have been first place this year. And that's what I put. Yeah. And they shit all
I've
over that.
I've always believed that the Kings and the Ducks were horrible. I've believed that since the first round of the playoffs. I said that the Golden Knights had a bye in the first round of the playoffs last year, and I said that before the playoffs started. I was right, and I thought the Ducks were awful too. Like, I just don't think they're built for what you need to do in today's NHL, and it's proven out. And both of them are complete and utter messes, and I'm loving every second of it.
Yeah, they're going to have to change whatever they were doing doesn't work anymore. And then you have teams like Vegas that have come in and. The way that team was built, and they've kept building on that success, especially with adding Stone and
Fleury being as good as he is, that these teams are going, oh shit, like that's the way to go now. That's who we're aiming at is Vegas and San Jose, and San Jose's getting to the wrong side of some of those contracts and ages of those guys too.
No doubt about it. It's going to be an interesting series, though. I think
you're
looking at two of the best teams in the West playing each other, and it's hard for me to look at it horribly objectively. I will admit that, because I watch every single Golden Knights game. I don't watch every Sharks game.
Right.
But when these two teams play, and I'm actually, as we're sitting here, I'm actually watching game two of last year's playoffs of that round, the Golden Knights play very, very well against the Sharks. And unless that changes, I don't see them losing the series.
And Vegas took the head-to-head this year, too. They, 2-1 and then 1?
2-1 and 1. Yeah, I mean, when you really look at those four games, the Golden Knights dominated in two of them. And by dominated, I mean one game they won 6-0, and another they won on a back-to-back with travel up in San Jose. The Golden Knights throttled San Jose. That was recently, towards the end of March. In the other games, Vegas was leading twice and blew both leads and then lost in regulation at home. And then this most recent one, which was another one where the Golden Knights weren't exactly engaged in the game, which has been a problem over the past 2 weeks. They kind of
looking ahead had the a little game bit. In
the grasp, and then they let it get away.
And, you know, my gut, when I look at this series, I go, I want San Jose to win because I want Joe Thornton to hold it up, and I'm a big Burns guy. And then
Don't talk to me about Burns then.
You don't like him?
Wait until you see the article I'm about to publish.
When's it going up?
It'll probably go up either tomorrow or Tuesday. It's very GIF heavy. I don't know what I'm going to title it yet, but it's going to be something along the lines of the best player on the Golden Knights is Brent Burns.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude.
He's that bad.
I look forward to reading that, dude. I love him, man. He's one of my favorites, but I can't wait to read that. That's going to be awesome, dude.
I recently watched the game that the Sharks won 3-2 in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I counted 6 times that Brent Burns got exposed miserably in the second period.
Oh, God, dude.
Yeah.
But like I was saying, though, I mean, I when I look at the West, it is, I think this series very well could be the team that goes. I mean, but Vegas has the upper hand on these guys and have beaten them before. And it's going to be San Jose looking at a team, if they don't beat this Vegas team, going, now what do we do? Because
right. It's
kind of – it didn't work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if San Jose struggles in this series again, and if it looks anything like the last series or any of these regular season games, they're going to have to take a look in the mirror in the offseason and just say,
yeah, hard
look. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Right.
Is it goalie? Is it – and honestly, maybe I'm wrong again, but they're going to eventually come back to Brent Burns is not the answer against the Golden Knights. He's going to play 24, 25 minutes per game, and in those 25 minutes – the Golden Knights are going to get more scoring chances than they do when he's off the ice.
He's one of those guys where if he's not producing offensively, it's going to – it shows. Because like you said, there's holes in his defensive game, and he is a defenseman. So he can be exposed in that way. And the Farmer Rob from Toronto, we were talking, and he – or maybe it was the guy from Chicago, Gatekeeper, but they were – looking at the goaltending from San Jose and just think it's abysmal. Like, how do you not make a move at trade deadline to even try Jimmy Howard to, or just do something?
Like, I completely agree. I think they're going to look back at that and wonder what they were doing. And the crazy thing is, as bad as Martin Jones and Aaron Dell have been, they're worse when they play the Golden Knights. They're really, really bad against the Golden Knights. And that's going to have to change. I don't think it's that crazy to think that can change in this series, but I don't think that they're ever going to have the upper hand in this series when it comes to goalies. The only way that happens is if Fleury gets hurt.
That's the only possible way. And because Fleury is somehow remaining, like, I don't know what he's doing in the offseason, or if he's like drinking, like, you know, the underground people of Vegas' blood, but he is like, he seems younger
than ever. Like when he's out there, I mean, what, he had like 8 or 9 fucking shutouts this year?
I think he ended up with 9, yeah, and that was a bunch of different games that he missed a good portion towards the end of the season. Played a lot at the beginning of the season,
right.
So rest was a concern that a lot of people had. The Golden Knights never seemed to have it at all. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does in the playoffs, because these last couple games have been – and I don't think it's been his fault, but he's given up a bunch of goals, and the last time he's been real good was early March. So it's – they're really reliant on flipping that switch on, and
yeah,
I think they can do it, but it wouldn't shock me if it takes them a period or two.
Yeah.
And that might be enough to cost you a game.
Yeah. It's kind of like that Pittsburgh switch that, you know, everyone worries about Pittsburgh in December. Like, they're going to make the playoffs. They're fine. Like, Sidney Crosby will not miss. Like, they'll figure it out by the end, and they're trying because they know what it takes for this second part of the, because this is a whole new season now. I mean, it's games upon games of the most intense hockey of the year.
Yep.
And I watched Vegas at afar, and they actually have a pretty big following here in Ohio, especially of dudes I know. A couple years ago, whatever, they got the team, that there was just dudes that are like, yeah, I'm a fucking Vegas fan. And that's, you know, it happens that way, and they rode with it. And that success, and now it's like these guys have been there, they've beaten this team, and they added Mark Stone, which is one of the best pickups of the season. And it's going to be – I did this fucking checklist, and it's – I keep saying I'm going to burn it down if it doesn't work. It's my Biscuit computer analytics, and it has Vegas out of the 9. They tied on 1, 6-4, so – my gut says San Jose, but my brain says the Vegas Golden Knights are going to take this series. And what would you think game-wise how far it's going to go for you as being around Vegas so much?
I'm expecting it to go 6 or 7. I think it'll be a fairly close series. It wouldn't shock me if the Golden Knights kind of get control of it early and are able to end it in 5. But I really do think that first game is going to be really important. Both teams are kind of sputtering coming into the playoffs. Both teams have a belief of what's going to happen in the series. You know, the Golden Knights are fairly confident that they are the better team going in, and the Sharks think that they're different this year and that things will be a little bit different. I think that first game, it's a huge game for the Sharks.
Yeah.
If the Golden Knights win the first game, they're off to the races again, and I think it's going to be tough for San Jose to turn it around. But if San Jose can get that game, and specifically if San Jose can get that game with any sort of conviction, like if they win it by 2 or 3 and really control the game, the ball's going to be in Vegas's court in a hurry. And if they don't turn it on, and they've proven to not be able to do that as easily as they were able to last year, it wouldn't shock me if things don't go as swimmingly for the Golden Knights this time around. So I do think there is a path for the Golden Knights to lose this series where I didn't really see it last year.
Right. And when you look up and down, you know, East Coast, West Coast, it's really one of the more intriguing matchups, I think, just because of what you said. It's going to be really intense in the first few games to see what happens, you know, going back to, you know, what happens when they head out of San Jose.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the fact that the series starts in San Jose, I think it adds a lot of intrigue to the series, in that had the series started in Vegas, I think we all kind of would have...
Yeah, it'd be a little different, I think, because they play well at the Shark Tank. They just do.
I think that if the Sharks come in here and if they get one of two or neither of the two, the series doesn't really start until it goes up to San Jose. I think they have to hold serve more in their home games than Vegas does, because I think the Golden Knights are much better up there than the Sharks are in Vegas. So the fact that it's starting up there, it really makes that first game. And honestly, I'm looking through the series, and granted, I will admit to being biased, it's probably the most interesting first game of the playoffs.
I agree, dude.
I don't think it's close.
It really is. I was looking at him too, and I'm like, man, you'd be a damn fool not to tune into that game 1. Like, if you're looking at it, like, what am I watching tonight? It's a no-brainer.
for you, the game starts at like, what, 4:15 in the morning?
Holy fuck, dude. Like, I go into work and people are just like, what happened to you? I'm like, the fucking West Coast was playing last night. Like, it's absolutely terrible. But it's only one time a year. And I'll turn on West Coast games when I'm going to sleep just to have, like, background noise. But now I'm, like, invested and, like, super fucking stoked. And I love that Vegas, you know, got that team, and like, it's now like formidable, hard fucking place to play hockey. Like, you guys have owned that team, and the city is fucking behind them, and like, it's a hard place to win fucking hockey games.
Very. And it's a fun place to watch a game, that's for damn sure.
Are they going to have, you know, any crazy shit going on this year, or are they going to try right? They have to, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, they'll have a new opening ceremony. I'm sure unveil some extra crazy crap. I mean, that's what they do. It's part of, that's the game within the game, right?
See, I like that shit beforehand. The Surge makes me pissed to no end.
Oh, I like the Surge.
I fucking hate it, but I'm an old curmudgeon. And those dudes, it's fine. Good. Go for them. Get the fans into it. Get people in the seats. I get it. I'm just thinking, like, if I was on the team, I'd be like, dude, this is fucking lame. What are we doing here? But I get why people like it. And if it's good for hockey, I'm all fucking for it. I know they said they're not going to do it for the playoff game. So at least they kind of know it's a little silly at least.
Probably a bit much for playoff games. I would agree with that. By the way, as I was sitting here, let me pull it back up here. Brent Burns played 110 minutes of hockey against the Golden Knights at 5-on-5 last year. He was on the ice for 3 goals for, 7 against, and he started 68% of his shifts in the offensive zone.
You're breaking my heart, dude.
Yeah, he's not good.
You're breaking my heart, man. I love him.
Shot attempts were higher for Vegas. High danger chances were higher for Vegas. Scoring chances were about even. And again, he played 68% of his shifts in the offensive zone.
How's that even possible?
Over 100 draws taken, he took only 27 in the defensive zone.
Do I hate Brent Burns? Yes,
gave up more goals than anyone on the team by 2. No one else on the team gave up more than 5. He was on the ice for 7.
This might be fake news. I don't know.
He was actually on the ice for 12, if you throw in the fact that for some unpronounced reason, I have no idea why they would ever play him when they're killing penalties. But they do, and he is just as bad at that as he is at 5-on-5.
With those stats, why the fuck would he be on the kill?
Well, I don't know.
Well, as a Vegas fan, you got to be stoked about it, right?
I mean, I have always enjoyed watching the Golden Knights and the Sharks. I think they play fun hockey, mainly because the Sharks play a style that doesn't lock down the neutral zone. And I can't stand teams that trap the neutral zone. Kings, Blues, Stars, these types of teams.
Yeah.
They make me want to whack my head against the wall. And luckily, the Sharks don't do that. And a lot of that is because Brent Burns doesn't go – he's never in the neutral zone.
No.
He's either in the offensive zone trying to score, or he's turned around skating forward towards his own goal as fast through the neutral zone as physically possible.
He's fucking wild man, dude. He's a wild man. He's a loose cannon. That's why I gotta love him, dude. Yeah, he is. That's just the truth of it. He's a forward.
That is not gonna work.
Yeah, he is a forward. That is for sure. Do you think there's any shot in hell that we see Reeves versus Haley?
Damn. I don't think Reeves is going to play.
I would. If Reeves isn't playing, then Haley's not seeing the fucking ice for sure.
And I think I'm interested to find out. I'll go to practice tomorrow and find out. But watching back these games, they didn't have Reeves in there at the beginning of the series, and they didn't put him in until they got to the point where they had to due to an injury. I don't think he's the right fit compared to having Carrier as an option, and then I think Ryan Carpenter's got to be on the line with Tuck and Eakin. It's their best option.
Carrier, a healthy Carrier, I don't think anyone hits anybody more in the league than him. Like, he is like, because we count hits in my fantasy league, and he has like almost 300 or some shit like that. Yeah. That dude is insane.
And he missed half the year.
Right. Like, he is just constantly hitting dudes. Like, that's all he does. So you think they'll scratch Reeves? Because I've noticed that he's kind of been issued out more and more as the season, you know, he got hot there for a little bit, and then he started playing less and less and less, and it seemed like the tail end of the season it was like, what do they say, he's resting, but you think it's just getting, he's just not going to play?
I think it's possible. I'm not, I wouldn't.
Because why are you resting Ryan Reeves?
Sure, he's not going to play, but I think it's possible.
That's what, it didn't make sense in my head. I'm like, you're resting Ryan Reeves. Like, he doesn't need rest. He's fine. He hasn't played that much minutes. Like, that didn't, it seemed more to me like, well, he's not going to play. We got to get these other guys out here to go.
I mean, he's played a majority of the year. He's played on that fourth line almost the entire season. So yeah. I think it would be an upset if I'm right that he's not going to play. But looking back on what they did last year, looking at what happened in that most recent game up there where it was basically just a melee for half the game for absolutely no reason. And it all started with a combination of Haley and Reeves, and a couple other guys got involved in it. But I don't think that's the game the Golden Knights want to play. I think they want to go up there. They want to play an open style, a free style, a fast style, and find a way to score goals early. And quite frankly, Carrier creates more offense than Ryan Reeves does. If Carrier's out of the lineup, I think it's going to be a mistake. If Carrier plays and Reeves plays, I can live with that. But I would play Noshik over Reeves if it's me.
Is Carrier at 100 right now?
Yes.
He's full bore ready to go. And
the only player that's not is Eric Halla, and he's injured bad, and we'll see if he makes it back, but I doubt it.
I was going to say his is like probably next season kind of deal.
I mean, he's been skating since March 1st, so.
Jeez.
So, yeah, I mean, here we are. What is it? It's April 7th, so you got a shot.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't been in practice yet. They've claimed he needs about a week to get back into practice and then get in the game. So it's, you know, he's got to do that first. But once that happens, I don't think they're going to hesitate to put him in there.
Did they bring any of their prospects up for the playoff run, like Glass or anybody like that?
No, the only thing they did was they signed Jimmy Schultz out of college. He's ineligible for the playoffs. He played last night. He was actually fairly good in a game that the Golden Knights gave two shits about, to say the least. But yeah, he was fine. He's ineligible.
Okay.
Glass is in the AHL right now. They left the entire defensive core in the AHL, which I still, to this moment, I believe that's a mistake. I hope it never comes up. But if the Golden Knights have to use an eighth defenseman, their three options have a combined one NHL game. It was the last game of the season last year.
Oh, wow. And who's their affiliate? Chicago?
Yeah.
The Wolves, right? Yeah. Oh, man. Well, if it works, it works. If, like you said, if it doesn't, that could bite you in the ass, I guess.
I mean, yeah, hopefully you don't go through two injuries. Oh, geez.
Jesus Christ.
I just knocked a plate off my table there.
I think you got broke it.
No, I think it's okay. I think it survived.
Dude.
We'll see. I don't know. Well, back to what I was saying. they have three different guys in the AHL that are options. One of them is a college free agent they signed last year. Now the dog's
pissed. Now the plate got the dog going, dude. It's a fucking trickle down.
Now the dog's pissed at the plate. That's Zach Whitecloud. The other is a second round pick in Nick Hague. And then the last is Jake Bischoff, a guy that they acquired at the expansion draft via trade. And again, like I said, between the three of them, they have one NHL game. And you shouldn't have two guys hurt in the playoffs, you would hope, but wouldn't be the first team to lose two defensemen in the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Crazier shit has happened, that's for sure. So you think Vegas in six, my fake computer analytics said Vegas. It wouldn't surprise me if the Sharks win, but like you said, this series is a one you stay up for if you're on the East Coast, I think. And this is what you want. When Gary Bettman's like, this is exactly what I wanted. This San Jose versus Vegas again, like, this is perfect. And I think this is why the division things are going to go for, what, a couple more years, and then they're going to try to maybe figure out something new. But for now, we should just enjoy these first round battles, because this one's going to be fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm one of the few people, I actually like it. Like, I've never really understood the hatred towards the playoff format. I don't mind it. I think there are better ways to do it. But as a whole, I do not mind it at all.
Yeah, I think there's better ways to do it too, but it doesn't bother me. Like, the second round's still going to be really good. Like, it doesn't matter if, like, the first round on paper matchups were better for the fake rivalries in the NHL. Like, it doesn't – it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, as far as this year goes, there's one team that is far and away, in theory, better than everybody else. And I think there are maybe four – probably the four wild card teams towards the bottom, and even that, I'm not even sure I'd go that far. Maybe two that are kind of below everybody else, and all the other teams. So you probably have 13 teams that are right there in the middle, and they can all do damage. And whether they play in the first round, the second round, the third round, it doesn't make a difference. You're going to have a hell of a couple months.
Absolutely, man. Now, when you look at the other side of the Pacific matchups, and you got Calgary Flames and Colorado Avalanche, how do you see this breaking down?
I think Calgary's got to make sure that they get going quickly, because they're still Calgary, and I think that they're still in a market that believes that they're going to fall flat on their face and shit the bed, because that's what they do. But this is a different team. This mm-hmm. is not a Calgary team like we've seen in the past. They play much higher tempo. They're very good in transition. They create a ton of scoring chances. And they're surprisingly adequate in their own end. Goaltending is a little bit of an issue. But yeah. with them, if they win the first two of the series, they'll win the series easily. If they don't, they're gonna have to overcome some clenched buttholes and figure out how to make sure that everything from the outside doesn't get into their own heads, because you lose a game at home and people are going to be start talking, oh, here we go, here comes Calgary again. Yeah. I think they're better than Colorado, and I think when push comes to shove, they'll be fine because they're better than Colorado, and I think it's significantly better than Colorado.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they are one of the teams like on the lineups that are – just better than who they're playing. I think they're just a better team than Colorado. Their goaltenders scare me, but they get it done. And they score so fucking much that most of the time it doesn't matter. Yep. And this team, like, it is built to get out, at least out of this first round, I think. The team is surrounded by talent, and Colorado kind of eked their way in, like dragging their broken legs behind them into the playoffs, and I think they'll get dealt with pretty easily.
They remind me, this Calgary team reminds me a lot of Vegas last year, in that it was almost a perfect regular season that throughout almost the whole year, they never had any problems. They were good. They were scoring. It was not a problem. The difference is they don't have the ace in the hole in Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
Last year, yeah. without him, do they get through Winnipeg? Probably not.
Probably not.
Do they
man.
Even get through San Jose? Maybe not. So
that's
they're going to win the first round. Second two, good luck.
That's what I think too, man. Like their goalie's just I don't see Mark Smith raising the cup up. I guess and like when I envision something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't like Smith or Riddick.
They're both like Smith is a fucking head case back there, and Riddick loses games that he's supposed to win, and this is the time of the year where that cannot happen.
Completely agree. You cannot give up goals that are easy. You've got to make the easy saves.
Yeah, yeah. And Colorado has been as hot and as cold as anybody all year, and I think they're coming in at a wrong time of their cold. And, you know, Nathan MacKinnon can't win this on his own. It's just not going to – no one has ever won a cup on their own.
Nope, not as far as skaters.
Right, exactly.
Goalies can, but skaters can.
That is a hot goalie in the playoffs is kryptonite to any other team.
Yep.
Because what's it take to win the cup? 16 games?
That's correct.
Yeah, if you get a goalie hot for 16 games, everyone's – look at Holtby last year. He went ham bone.
Yep.
He's like, oh, bench me for the first two games and then watch what I do. I'll go psycho on everybody.
Yep. You get a goalie going, you're going to be able to steal a couple of games, and it makes a huge difference.
And I have to ask you, you know, I'm a Columbus fan, and we're playing Tampa Bay. Do you think there's any shot in hell?
Yeah, I do.
My man, you're the only one that said that so far. I think so too. When I was looking at the I don't want to play Pittsburgh again because we don't play Pittsburgh well at all. That's a real thing. Like, despite what anyone ever wants to say, like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, Pittsburgh, there's something in Bob's head where he cannot beat Pittsburgh. It just doesn't work. And Capitals, I just don't want to play them again. I don't want to see that series again. So I was like, yeah, fuck, give me Tampa Bay. They have the president's curse on them. Let's go. Let's see what happens. No one's expecting Columbus to win.
I was actually surprised by how low the number was in Vegas. I don't know how familiar you are with odds, but they're only plus 300.
Oh, really?
3-1.
Really? And I thought it'd be higher.
You know, yeah. You think of like a basketball series. Whoever plays the Warriors, they're going to be plus 30. You know, or 30-1. They're plus 3,000. Like 3-1's not that crazy.
It really isn't.
In one of those first two games, you've got a shot.
Yeah, and it's. If you get one of them first two games, people are going to start worrying too. Like, what's going on here? Like, because Columbus has been so weird since the trade deadline. You know what I mean? That this team has been trying to mold together. But
the difference is, if they don't get one of the first two, just pack it up.
Yeah.
If you're down 2-0 going back, you're done.
Yeah, probably not good. Especially,
that's not the case in a lot of these series.
Right.
Like, I would say most of these series, that's not the case. Almost everyone outside of that, maybe Colorado's the only other one that I look at and say they can't be down 2-0. Everybody else, I think, can be down 2-0. Columbus, you've got to get one in Tampa because I don't think they're going to win them all in Columbus.
I agree.
So I think they've got to get one in Tampa, and they probably are going to – they might even need two in Tampa, but you've got to get one of the first two.
Getting game one
would be huge.
Oh, my God, dude. I'd be so fucking rock hard my pants would break, dude. There'd be no
– that is too much for me.
that's the take, though, is – And I agree 100% that all the series, a team that needs to win on the road more than anybody is Columbus. Because we're not that good of – or Columbus is not that good of a home team either.
No.
You know, so you go back 0-2, you're not going to be like the Capitals last year and be able to swing. I don't think so, be able to swing that. But I also don't mind the matchup. I think, fuck it, let's go. You've built the best team this – you know, on paper this – franchise has ever had. Let's see what happens.
And look at what's happened over the past couple of weeks.
They've come alive.
It started to look like people were starting to shit all over Columbus and make fun of the trades and make fun of holding on to the players. And all of a sudden, they started to band together and they played some of the best hockey that they played. Well, guess what? Here you are in a series where you're told you have no chance. Everyone believes you have no chance.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, a team that should have all the pressure on the world because – they went all in, has none.
Yeah.
It's the best case scenario to win a series. Now, granted, the only problem is you're playing one of the best teams in NHL history.
Of all time, yeah. Yeah. And I also like the chances of Columbus getting out of the Atlantic if they can get that Tampa Bay better than getting out of the Metro for Columbus.
I'm not as confident that they can beat Boston or
Toronto. Well, fuck Boston up, dude.
I don't know about that. Boston's who I'm picking to win the whole West.
Really?
Or East, yeah.
So you got Boston versus who? Vegas?
Yeah.
Dude, that's a nice cup. I don't hate that at all.
I'm looking forward to it because I can't stand Boston, or I don't particularly like people from Boston, and I don't really want to go to Boston, but if I have to.
Oh, the worst part will be them coming out to you, bud.
Yeah, it'll be annoying.
That'll be the worst part of it. I said last year I thought Boston would get one before Chara leaves, and he's coming back next year, so either this year or next year would be the right thing to do if my brain works at all.
A team's sneaky good.
Yeah, dude.
The team is sneaky, sneaky good. They've been good all year long.
And super competitive.
They've been one of the very few teams that have dealt with injuries very well.
We were saying earlier they had five – of their like six D-core down at one point or some shit like that. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, they lost Pastrnak, stepped up, no problem. They're very, very good.
They plug it in well, man. Well, Ken, so who do you think wins the whole thing? Who do you think holds the cup up at the end of this year?
Oh, I don't think it would be right if I didn't pick Vegas, right?
That's my man. You gotta. I'm a homer too. Go Columbus.
I mean, as much as I want to say, like, oh, yeah, I'm not a homer, like, I honestly believe that.
It's not a bad pick. Exactly, yeah.
There is obviously that to it. But I do think that they're going to beat San Jose. I think that they should have a very good chance against Calgary. I think that's the hardest series they'll have to deal with this year. And then I don't think that any of the Central Division teams are all that good.
No, I think anybody would agree. The Central Division seems just like a giant shit show. Like, what is going on there? Like, it. Yeah, it's if a team. It's going to be a team out of the Pacific versus most likely Tampa Bay.
I mean, that would be the most obvious pick, and that would not surprise me in any way. If it's Tampa, I don't think Vegas can beat Tampa. I think they can beat Boston. I think they can beat Toronto. I think they could beat pretty much anybody else. Maybe not Washington, actually, but I don't think the Caps are going back.
No, I think they partied too hard and enjoyed last year. That I didn't. I thought they'd get a wild card this year. They, you know, ended up winning the Metro, but. That's,
yeah, they've been good. They've been good.
They're a very good team, but I don't even think they really care to win another one.
I think they might, but I don't like the path for them. I think it's tough from the get go.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
And I think New York's going to be a challenge. I New York reminds me so much of that stupid Ottawa team that almost did it a couple years ago. Remember that damn team?
Yeah, dude, running the
God, they were so annoying.
What the fuck is that?
Everyone who watched them.
Is that 2-1-1 or whatever they would run? The fucking
it's just a mega trap. Like, yeah, you never can get into the neutral through the neutral zone on them.
Oh, it was so boring, and it worked so well for them, and then people had enough and figured it out. But that year. And they damn near beat Pittsburgh that year.
I'm telling you, watch out for this New York team.
Oh, the Islanders, for sure, dude. They played that kind of slow pace. They don't give up goals, dude.
And that's a lot of the way to win. Now, yeah. They're going to have to be good on special teams. I think that's the one thing that concerns me a little bit, is that I think that they're a little reliant on special teams. That if they're not getting power play goals, they're not going to score a lot. And it's tough to win playoff series if you're not scoring a lot. But how much is Pittsburgh going to score on them? It might only take two a game to win.
I said the same exact thing, dude. I was like, no game's going to be over like two goals. That's just going to be the thing. But there's that X factor of Sidney Crosby being the best player in the world.
You've said it before. You can't win with one player.
God damn it, Ken. You're right. God damn it.
Not one player.
You're right. Shit. No, that
team stinks. Like, look, honestly, watch that team play. They're not good. That is not a good team, Pittsburgh. They're not.
No, they have kind of just Pittsburghed their way in.
Yeah, they did what they always tend to do, but that normally they have that extra gear to turn it on. I don't think the goalie's that good. Murray's been kind of, since the cup runs, has been kind of just a guy.
I'm not a Murray guy. I'm not a Murray guy.
Like, I don't buy it. Like, I think they're out in the first round, and I think it might be quick.
I don't know about quick, but I think they're out the first round too. I agree with you, and I think they don't match up physically well against guys like Mayfield and Clutterbuck and Matt Martin. And I think they're on the island too. I think they can. Yeah. Oh, dude, and you got to go to fucking Nassau and into that psycho fucking round.
Good luck.
What sucks is that. Well, it's the only round guaranteed to be there, and the rest are at Barclays.
No, and that's probably as far as the Islanders will go.
So at least we get that one, though, dude. I agree, man. Ken, dude, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Thanks for taking the time out. Tell the Biscuit Babies where to find you, man, and I look forward to crying while I read your Burns piece.
The website's sinbin.vegas. We're on all the social medias at sinbinvegas. Just type in sinbinvegas wherever in whatever you're on, and you'll probably figure it out. We're going to all the games. That's the plan. The only way I'm not going is if it's 2-2. I ain't driving 8 hours to go watch a game that's 2-2. Sorry. But I'm planning on being out at every postseason game outside of that.
Well, be safe in your journeys, man. And have you been out on the ice again since that first time I saw you out there?
Because I don't know how – well, no. I'm going to say no.
You didn't do that bad, dude. You were right there, man.
Wasn't good.
You could fucking get it, dude. Just a couple more times. You fucking left, right, march, dude. Bend your knees. You're fine.
All right, I'll break one thing. I bought skates.
My man.
I have my own skates. I got some CCM tacks.
Dude, that's exactly what I have, bro.
Yeah, they're solid.
I got.
And, Now we got to figure out how the fuck to use
them. Hockey Monkey was running a fucking clearance on him. I was like, Daddy needs some new skates. I can't pass up $60 fucking tax, bro.
What, $60? I paid $120.
What the fuck, dude? I paid $60.
When did you get them?
2 months ago?
Oh, mine was like a month ago. Damn it.
Get out there, dude. You got it, man. You'll be a beer league king here fucking before no time, dude.
I'll get there.
And everybody, go to Sinbin, too. They're always doing giveaways and fun shit and squares and everything.
Yeah, we have one right now if you're in Vegas.
Well, I'm not in Vegas, man.
Well, if anyone is listening, just go to the store, T-Mobile store on the Strip, and you're giving free tickets away to the playoffs.
Boom. You're the man.
Yeah, I swear, we give more shit away
anybody.
Than any other Twitter handle on the internet.
Period. There's only, like... There's one of those, like, everything cool hockey or whatever that get, and I'm not even sure they're actually giving stuff away. I think they're just trying to get retweets.
You're right, than any, like, legitimate media source.
Right.
Nobody gives away more shit than we do.
Let me get a fucking sticker or something, dude. Damn. I want to win.
Send me your damn address.
I just got a garage fridge, dude. I need a Simbin sticker on there.
I got magnets. I'll send you a magnet.
Dude, I'm fucking living the dream. We got beer loaded up there, dude. It's the best.
Do you have Reeves beer yet?
No, I heard about this. Have you had it? Is it shit?
I don't drink beer. All right, fine. It's story time.
Give it to me.
So I don't drink beer. I don't drink any alcohol. I don't smoke or drink. I gamble.
Yeah.
That's my thing. So a guy recently asked me on Twitter. He said, I have 4 Ryan Reeves beers. I've drank one during each of the last 3 games. They've lost all 3. What should I do with the 4th one? And he said, put it in the refrigerator or just keep going and drink it. And my response was, garbage. You know, break the streak. Well, Ryan Reeves retweets it and puts the quote that said, why don't you throw your Twitter handle in the garbage? And then put hashtag pigeon, which I've come to learn means he's calling me a pussy.
Yeah. Ryan Reeves called you a pussy?
That's correct. So we went up to Ryan Reeves in the locker room and we said, yo, what the fuck? I didn't call your beer garbage. I said, throw that particular beer in the garbage because you guys can't win when this guy's drinking your beer.
Oh my God. What'd he say to that?
Still wasn't thrilled about it. He's like, don't throw my beer in the garbage. I'm like, all right, fine. I just want to make sure you knew.
Holy shit, dude. So you're not a pussy because you went and fucking looked at...
I don't care. What's he going to do? Punch me?
Yeah, that's exactly what he was
doing. And actually, since we actually now we're trying to hook Ryan Reeves up with something else. You ever heard of Cameo?
No.
So it's this website where you go on there and you buy like a personalized video message from a celebrity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's kind of like the Fire Island shit, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's this dude named Joe Pace. He's a ECHL player or something. He might even not be ECHL. I think it's even a shittier league than that. And the Portland Prowlers he's on or something like that. I don't even remember. And it was $3. So I bought one live on our podcast, and I put in, like, hey, we want to shout out to the Sinbin.Vegas podcast, and then we want you to explain to Ryan Reeves why he should be on Cameo. And this dude was unreal. Like, we got the video back in a day, and it's amazing.
What?
We're going to play it on our next podcast. Yeah, he's so good. He's, like, explaining why Ryan Reeves is going to do it. And now tomorrow at practice, we're going to show Reeves the video. And, like, I can almost guarantee you Ryan Reeves is on Cameo before the season starts next year.
So are you guys going to film that tomorrow then?
I don't know if we'll film it because it'll be kind of stupid, him watching the video. But, like, we'll document it. We'll talk about it on the podcast. And we're also doing one of our stupid podcasts where we turn on our mics when we drive up to San Jose and we just yap.
Dude, that's a brilliant idea, though. I mean,
people liked it last year, so we're going to try it again.
Because what? You record the whole 8 hours?
We don't do the whole 8 hours because we get tired of actually coming up with shit to talk about that's entertain.
That's a long time.
We'll probably do like 3.5 or 4.
Do you ever like say something during the off time and go, fuck, we should have been fucking taping?
Actually, yes. We thought we were taping, but someone called me midway through. And it canceled the recording, and then we didn't find out until much later. And we had some great stories that we told, and then they disappeared. So, oh well.
Yeah, what are you going to do? That's podcasting life,
This time, airplane mode.
Yeah, that's what I do when I do the Biscuit Watches Hockey movies. We were like halfway through Mighty Ducks and a fucking FaceTime came through from my mm-hmm. sister-in-law and I wanted to fucking kill somebody.
Yep, screws the whole thing up. It's an absolute disaster. Yep.
Dude, you're the man. Be safe traveling, dude. And I can't wait to see that piece on Burns. And you guys do great work over there at Sin Bin Vegas, man.
You got it.
All right, have a good night, bud.
See ya.
All right, Biscuit Babies. Last but definitely not least, we're into the Metro Division. My good friend Andy Picaro, co-host of the Unhealthy Scratch podcast, a stand-up comedian and frequent guest on Puck Off with Joe Bartnick and Fraser Smith. Andy, how's it in L.A., bud?
Dude, it's good. It's great to be back on here, man. The quality of your guests make me feel bad when you call me. It's like, I guess there wasn't some really, really popular old school goon available, man. Like, it's amazing.
They're all busy today, I guess.
Nah, the people you've been getting, and the same thing happened at Puck Off. The week I was in, they were like, I was walking out, and Fraser's like, next we got Darren McCarty. I was like, wow, I wonder which one's gonna have more downloads.
Yeah, dude, it's been really. I've been working my tail off over here, and it's been actually
that's great, though.
Showing
great.
Through. So are you officially an LA comic yet, or what's the deal with that?
I don't know if that'll ever be, but I don't know what I am. Started in New York, spent too much time in Pittsburgh, and now I'm fish out of water everywhere. But it's crazy being out here with the hockey being this bad this year.
Yeah,
I mean, like I know we're gonna talk Metro, but I mean, you know, I love to watch playoff hockey. I'd love to be able to go to a game. And it's living on the East Coast. I never remember this happening. I never didn't live within 45 minutes of an NHL playoff game. And yeah. I know that's really snotty to say, being because in the New York area, it was easy. Rangers, Devils, one of them were in for mm-hmm. 20 years. And then, you know, living in Pittsburgh and now here, it's just weird that I can't even, you know, pony up the couple hundred bucks to go sit up top and see some playoff hockey. It's killing me out here.
It's been abysmal out there this year.
Oh, it's and the Ducks. I mean that Ducks like early to mid winter run of just ruining their season. And I mean the Ducks have had so many injury problems and you know they just keep getting a little bit older.
Yeah.
And then so the Ducks to me the Ducks were a surprise. I think the Ducks were a pretty good team. They just had a terrible what was it like December, January, and February. They couldn't come back from having 3 months where they didn't. Really play hockey.
No, you drop 10 in a row like that, it's going to be hard to fucking to get
and
back.
And it was like, I mean, it was like 22 of like 26 or something like that. Like, it got crazy. It got really like obnoxious bad.
They've been,
and yeah, you can't recover.
They can't stay healthy either the last few years.
No, yeah.
Which doesn't help when you have an old team and then an unhealthy team. It's just a recipe for disaster, man.
Yeah, and I like whenever they would make a move, somebody would get hurt. The Ducks are just a frustrating season. The Kings are just going in the wrong direction. And we saw it with Chicago, even though they stayed in it this year. And we're seeing a little bit the Penguins. You can't – whatever goes up comes down. So the Kings aren't that big of a surprise. You know, it's a surprise they're this bad. It's also a surprise they signed Kovalchuk. But, you know, I don't think anybody had them doing anything this year, really. But – yeah, I wish I was back east to see some good hockey.
And the Penguins kind of have surprised me this year. You know, when I did my preseason picks, I thought, you know, Sydney and the boys had, you know, an earlier end to a season last year than they're used to. You know, you gotta know he's a mega competitive guy. It's like they're gonna come back in, they're gonna win the Metro this year, and really just set the tone that we're still the Pittsburgh Penguins, and they've just. They've been better than so-so, but for that team, they've been so-so.
I think for the team they have rostered now, they've been exactly what they are. I think for the expectation of them still being the best team kind of went out. I mean, I really think that 17 team just kind of maintained. They were a bend-not-break kind of team to win the Cup. There's really only two types of teams that win. Like, you know, are you like the 90s Red Wings where you win in four or five? Or are you like, you know... the late 90s Devils where, you know, you're going to win in six or seven. Like, you're going to, like, you know, how do you just maintain and make it through or do you dominate? And I thought in 16, the Penguins really dominated, but in 17, it was tough, you know, and I think there's a few teams that could have won the Cup that year. And I mean, every year is like that a little bit, but I think the parity is really, you know, in this league, there's a lot of good teams. And, you know, if you lose a couple pieces and as pieces get older, It's always hard to keep a third line that can score or three lines that can score, and that's certainly really important. And I think that the Penguins, you know, it's not Matt Cullen's fault that they still think Matt Cullen can be Matt Cullen of 2 or 3 years ago and have that leg punch. And there's just not depth there in that bottom six up front. I think their defense has been good. And I think Murray, even though he's taking a lot of crap, you know, he lets in some weird goals late, which, you know, any goalie on any level, you let in a weird goal late, you're going to get some crap.
Murray has
he's been good.
Is it his glove side or his pad side?
His glove.
It's fucking, it's incredible how weak it is sometimes.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that it's like he's so positional, and I think that he just is always about cutting off the angle and making the save without moving that much.
Yeah.
The initial save, at least, and he just, I don't know, I think that he gets in his head too much, and there was even a rumor this year that some of these injuries were a little bit like mental health-related injuries.
Oh, really?
Phantom things. Yeah, I mean, who knows, but I at least there was an issue with him having a confidence issue. This past summer, he, I guess, had met with a like, sports psychologist and stuff like that to talk about confidence issues. So he's got, like every goalie, he's weird. Anybody that grew up playing hockey knows how weird goalies are.
And he's still, what, 22 or 23?
Yeah, he's so young that, and you know, he already has two cup wins. He had a Stanley Cup win before he was even officially not a rookie anymore, which is just so much winning so early. It's like getting famous when you're young. It's like imagining, you know what I mean, like the Hansen kids being normal a couple of years in. You've got to be a little bit weird. And I think he'll settle back down and but like numbers wise, he's been fine. Numbers wise, he's a top five, you know, six goalie in the league. But if you watch the replays, if you watch the game breakdowns, it looks like he's Swiss cheese because he gives up a lot of weak ones, especially to that high glove.
Oh, high glove side on him is just like why wouldn't you throw it there every fucking time?
Yeah, and honestly, I don't mean to pick on him, but I don't remember such a simple. Not simple, I mean, it's very hard to do, but a simple goaltending thing that you can look at an NHL goalie and go, why is it like, you know, I guess there were certain guys, you know, that would give up rebounds. But I said certain guys because I can't even think of somebody who has that big of a glaring weakness that everybody goes at. But again, like, when you look at the numbers, like, you like to, like, it's easy to roast them. And trust me, I have this year. But when you look at the numbers, he plays consistently. He stops enough pucks. It's just it's almost like a puck-moving defenseman. Uh-huh. They're always going to have bad replays because they're trying to move the puck frantically every time. You know, like Nick Lidstrom gave up a lot of pucks up the middle. You know, if you just watch the replays, you go, hey, that number five stunk. And you're like, well, not really. He's trying a lot there.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it's, you know, and I think that non-Hall of Fame puck-moving defenseman, you always hear that. Like, people like to go, Keith Yandel sucks. It's like, Keith Yandel always has the puck.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sometimes he's going to make a mistake with it. He's getting it every time.
Yeah, the eyes are on those guys more often than not.
Absolutely, and then when they make, you know, and then a mistake is just so magnified because they're the first one back to retrieve the puck. They're making the first pass out of the zone. So I think that, you know, with goalies, it's even, you know, as we know, you can be really hard on them. But yeah, I think the Penguins are what they are. I think them and the Islanders is a really, really good series. I think I told you over text somebody in six.
Yeah,
no, they split the season series. And they play each other tough, and I like both of them to surprise somebody later once they make it through each other. Like, I don't know who to pick between the two. I know I like them if they win the one, not maybe to come out of the East, but I like them to win maybe another series, be, you know, possibly the Capitals, who, you know, I think the Metro is so even that everybody can beat everybody. So that's the one thing that's going to be fun about going into this stretch right here.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, just touching back on Murray too, it's he's getting looked at too because he has those two cups. You know, he had two cups and was a rookie. Like, it's like literally impossible to do what he did. And then, you know, I've never been high on the guy just because he won two cups. And like, as a Blue Jackets fan, I'm just like, fuck, this fucking guy is like, Jesus Christ, dude. Does he just give him all the cups? And like, him coming in and, you know, the young guy and Fleury going out, I was just like, ah, fuck this guy. But it's undeniable that he's good. But that high glove and then him being hurt all the time, I'm like, was that the right choice? But when he's in there, I mean, he's a winner.
You know, and as much as I love Fleury, I've always been, you know, of the mindset that Murray was the only, you know, decision to make. And
right.
I've, and But I've always kind of felt like, you know, and this sounds silly to say, but they were so dominant in 16 that they, I think they sweep the Sharks if Fleury plays instead of Murray.
Ooh.
And I think that they might win a couple other series quicker. They were so dominant in a couple of those games, especially game four in the Stanley Cup Finals, were on Murray.
Yeah.
And look, he ended up winning the Cup, so how much can you really even bitch about it?
Right.
He won the Cup a couple games later than maybe with Marc-Andre. But, you know, I think that he's always been inflated, and when you win two championships in a row like that, it's going to just inflate you. Like, I don't know if he's ever going to be, you know, literally one of the top five goalies, if he's going to be a Vezina candidate, but I think he'll always be right outside of kind of what Fleury always was. So I think that it was kind of an even trade-off. I think that people romanticize Fleury as never having problems.
Yeah.
Which, if, you know, they weren't around then in 2011, 12, 13.
When everybody hated him.
Yeah. There was a lot of problems. There was a year where Thomas LeCun had to come in and start.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, it's a great Islander series that year, which is going to be very similar to the series that's coming up.
And I think, too, like you said, this series, the Penguins and the Islander series, when I look at all the series, is my second or third favorite series coming into, as a fan of watching the game. I think it's going to be really intense and close, and a lot of coaching going on too, which I don't mind at all as a fan, seeing how they're going to play those lines and how the defense is going to work for Trotz, or just how good is Sidney Crosby still too. Like, I love watching him play, because in my opinion, he's still the greatest in the world until he's not.
Well, to me, it's like, you got Lee and Barzal and Bailey, really exciting. And then obviously on the other side, you got Crosby, Malkin, and Phil, and Jake. So the top, I really think that the Penguins might have they have an edge in the top six. But again, I'm going to go to the bottom six, where I really think, forward-wise, that the Islanders probably win this series in six. And I just like their third and fourth line so much better. And I like, what the Penguins have going on with Bjugstad and Hornqvist, but you know, Derek Sloan, he kind of ruins that line for me, and then Garrett Wilson having to play on the fourth line. I love Teddy Bluger. Matt Cullen does bring it, but he can only bring it for like 13, 14 minutes a game,
right,
the way you want them to. And then you look at the other side with that fourth line of Clutterbuck and Mark Zekas. That's a great fourth line.
That fucking fourth line is nasty, dude.
That's a great fourth line.
That's a fourth line that gets you far in the playoffs.
And then when you go to the third line and you think about, okay, we got Bjugstad and Hornqvist, and I really like Bjugstad, and obviously I like Hornqvist. They have Flipula and Komarov then on their third line. It's like, you know, I know they got Tom Kunackle on their second line and right now, and you know, things could move around, but you know, so it's a bit of a push, but depth wise, I think it goes Islanders. Like it's only a push because the Penguins have Crosby and Malkin, and they have that one too.
Yeah,
if one of them doesn't play well, or God forbid gets dinged up, I think it goes Islanders up front. And then, you know, defensively, I don't love the Islanders either. I kind of like the Penguins better, and I kind of like the Penguins better in goal.
Is Letang going to be healthy?
How much? Supposedly, I'll feel better about it when he's taking warmups for game one.
That son of a bitch.
But I think so.
He clowns me every year.
Play.
He clowns me every year.
But yeah,
every year, Mike. Every year, I'm like, he's going to win the Norris this year. And he gets fucking hurt, and I'm just like, God damn it, dude. But
this is the first year he deserves it, in my opinion.
He's so good.
I really think he's, honestly, and I can't believe it, because I never thought it about him. I thought he's the best defenseman in the league this year. And not that I've ever thought, I've always liked Letang, but I've always thought that the Penguins could use a number one defenseman who's a shutdown defenseman. And he's always been close, but he's always been Chris Letang because of what he can do offensively and what he can do with his feet. But this year is the best year he's ever played defensively. He really was a shutdown guy this year. And for the first, half the season before Crosby, went, ballistic and kind of put him on their back around Christmas, put him on his back, Letang was, the MVP. And I think there's still kind of an argument that Letang is probably the most valuable player on the Penguins. And if he's not going, let's just say he's going to play. If he's not going at 100%, the Penguins are—they're done. They're not going to beat anybody.
Yeah.
And then people go, well, they won the Cup without Letang. That's a much different team.
Yeah,
that was a much different team that won the Cup without Letang. You know, and having Trevor Daley as a 1A, got that done. You know.
What do you think about?
I don't think. Go ahead.
Oh no, go for it.
I was just saying I don't think that the Penguins have a bad defensive core at all. I think people get too down on Jack Johnson sometimes. It's not great.
Why do you think he gets shit on so much? Because I don't mind Jack Johnson. I loved him when he was here in Columbus. I know his game isn't the prettiest thing, but he's in there in the spots you need a defenseman to be at.
Again, I'm with you. I'm not as anti him as mostly everyone.
Everyone hates him.
Yeah, but I haven't been to a game in Pittsburgh this year, but I'd love to know if anyone's wearing a 73 jersey. I mean, people are really on it. And, you know, I think that the biggest problem he has is that he is a guy that's come in the league where if he was in the league before Fenwick and Corsi was talked about, because if you had a bad game back then, you just had a bad game. The fact that he somehow is statistically abysmal in every way that you look at it, goes after he has a bad game, you pull up the stats and he's on ice for so many goals for, you know, he's just a problem, especially just being out of position. He goes for, you know, big hits a lot and makes a lot of big hits, but he's also kind of caught up in the zone sometimes. And then he gets hesitant and he backs too far up. It's a confidence thing with him. I think it always has been. I think, you know, a guy that's had the issues he's had back when he was at, you know, Michigan, his dad used to make, you know, Jack motherfucking Johnson t-shirts and sell them at games and got in trouble. Like, there's always been a lot of weird elements off the ice in him, so I've always, you know, kind of felt bad for him, but...
Yeah, he's always had that weird cloud over him.
Yeah, and I think it's just, he's just a hesitant defenseman. Like, as a defenseman, that's, like, the worst thing you can be. You've got to just play. And I honestly think he'd be scratched if he wasn't making so much. And I think that if he has a bad couple games, he will get scratched because, you know, you need to pay a guy, or you need to play a guy you're paying in the regular season. You got to hope it works out. But if he's not one of the best six guys practicing, you know,
who do they?
I can't see it happening.
Who comes up for him if he is scratched?
Peterson and Trotman and Ricola all have played. I don't think Trotman's the guy that they would ever play over him. I think Peterson is.
Yeah.
So I think if he doesn't practice well, Peterson's going to be in the game, and Peterson's a lefty, so it's perfect. Boom, right in.
Yeah, I thought Jack would be better in Pittsburgh this year. I still didn't mind his game, but I thought, you know, being like really good friends with Sidney Crosby and working out with him, that he would go in and just they would gel more. And there's just sometimes if it doesn't work with Sidney early, you know, it's just not going to happen. He'll just you're not going to see the puck from him, or you're not going to be out there when he's on the ice ever again.
No, he is. He's just the epitome of like I remember when defensemen used to go to New York or Toronto to end their careers, and they would just lose all confidence after they got burnt, like on a Tuesday night and got booed all night. You know what I mean? They would just lose all confidence for a year. And I feel like Jack Johnson went through that in the first couple months in Pittsburgh. He wasn't playing well. He didn't quite get booed, but it just wasn't working the way he thought it was. The team wasn't playing great. And I think that he just hasn't gotten his footing yet. If he can just find some confidence and make some decisions, step up or don't be in the middle. You know, don't back up to the point where you can't make a poke check and you're in the goaltender's way. And like, there's just little things defensively that have made him right now the number six guy, and he's making too much money to be at number six.
So. Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think he's got a good game. I just think he hasn't. And I think that, you know, I love Tortorella, but I think that, you know, when you're not playing well under Tortorella, I wonder how bad that cloud hangs over you. It affects you to have when you have an aggressive Herb Brooksian-style coach.
Oh, yeah. He has no qualms sitting in anybody.
Yeah, and it's not like he got any break coming to Mike Sullivan's team. The guy who his tutelage was all under Tortorella.
Learned from Torts, I mean? Right.
So, exactly, yeah. Now, so, I think he's not got a lot of comfortable meetings the past 2 years.
He's just getting shit on everywhere.
it's been sweaty palms at the table for him. So, you know.
I think he can be helpful, though, too, if, say, there's a Scott Mayfield out there or some of the more physical guys that where Pittsburgh doesn't match up as well. If you get Johnson's not going to back down. He'll get in there and get chippy with Mayfield or Clutterbuck or any of them guys if he needs to.
That's the biggest thing about him right now is that he is a really good buffer, and he keeps – because really the biggest thing where the Penguins is keeping Sid and Gino just out of it. you know, and losing Kunitz really hurt that. Because it's just, if there's nobody out there to really, you know, go and start jawing and stand in between things, because those guys will do it, because they're chippy.
And Malkin is...
Especially Malkin.
He's so fucking bad at it, too. I'm like, he loses his game completely, gets, like, super bad fucking penalties, and, like... The dude is a big...
The hooks he throws, the way he hooks people in the neutral zone and like doesn't think he's going to get caught and then does that arms out to the side thing that Jágr complaining most is just unbelievable. Whenever he stops moving his feet, you just hold your breath and go, oh, he's coasting in the neutral zone. He's looking for a breakaway or he's going to hook somebody. He's trying to do one or the other.
I want someone to sit him down and be like, all right, these are your fights from hockey. You're like, you can't do it, dude. You got to stop playing like this. Like, you are a pud. Like, be the giant Russian fucking goal scorer point getter that you are, because when they get him off his game like that, he's fucking useless.
He has a hell of a temper, and I remember, I think it was 2011 in the playoffs when him and Crosby just broke down, and they both had fights against Boston, and the next year, they both fight against Philly, and it was like, okay, this can't keep happening. The scrums cannot be, so it goes back to Johnson. It's important to have Johnson and Gabranson and guys that are going to be buffers, because if not, they'll get pulled into the bullshit.
Yep.
And you know, if you're Zdeno Chara, you'd love to sit down for 5 minutes for wrestling Malkin.
Oh, absolutely.
You
know what I mean?
Like, you could use the rest, your legs, it's old and tired. And you know, it's so it's like guys, especially veterans in the league, Bergeron, I don't know why I keep thinking of Bruins, they're so good at goading other stars into just out of their game while they can stay on their game.
Now, did you do preseason picks before the season started? How did you have the Metro shaken out?
The Metro, I had the Caps win it.
Okay.
Because I just believe they're the best team. I still think they're the best team. I think you can't pick against the Stanley Cup winners, and I think that as we've seen, that team is the best team in the Metro. But that's not saying I don't think any team in the Metro that made it can knock them out, because I think they could. But I still think they're the best. But I kind of like whoever comes out of Pittsburgh and New York to beat the Caps, you know. But we'll see. But yeah. I'm not that high on them. But, you know, like I said, I think it's not that great a division. I think that, you know, you take the Atlantic, and basically I think almost every team – playoff team that is in the Atlantic, it beats anybody in the Metro in 5 or 6.
So
I just don't see it. I don't see it happening. I don't see, you know, Boston and they're just too good.
Yeah,
the teams are just too good to lose, especially in an Eastern Conference final round. I just don't see the Hurricanes gutting it out.
No, and I think for the Islanders and Pens, my gut says the Penguins win, but I when I have it broken down here, you know, and when I'm filling out my bracket, I think the Islanders edge it out, and like you said, it wouldn't be surprised if it was 6. And
I'm going Isles in 6. I don't know.
That's
my gut. Yeah,
I don't hate that. So, what do you think about the Caps and Canes series? How do you have that shaken out?
I like the Canes. I think it was neat. This is actually the second best season they've ever had, points wise. Now, I guess the loser point. I mean, we've had the loser point for a while now, but it kind of plays into that. But
yeah,
this is the best season they've ever had, even going back to the Hartford years. It was 99 points, or second best season, I think it is. I don't think they win more than a couple games. I think it's Caps and again 6. Maybe even Caps in 5. I just think that the Caps are going to be sharp as hell. They want to win again. This time of season that they've been waiting for all year is finally back around. And I think the Caps definitely take care of business and win the round they're supposed to win. That to me might be my least favorite series.
Yeah, it's the least intriguing.
It's not going to be that competitive. I really don't think the Canes are going to have the puck that much. And if they can win 2 games, I think it's like a big win for them. I don't see them doing much. And if they are able to upset them, it'd be pretty crazy. Not that there wouldn't be a bigger upset in the East possibility, but I don't see it happen. I don't see them getting any traction in that series. And I think that, you know, again, it's just a depth thing. Again, like, I like the Hurricanes, but all the Caps have is depth. I mean, I love them bringing in Carl Hagelin. You know, he's a good penalty killer. He eats minutes during important times. Mm-hmm. That third line with Dowd and Burkowski, I really like that team. Defensively, I don't think they're as good as they have been. But John Carlson's still a Norris-level guy who's going to eat up half the game. And then, you know, they've, you know, Niskanen and Orlov and Brooksy back there as their six. They have a solid team. And then you look over at the Hurricanes. Once you get past the first two lines, they're not scoring. And if you got to rely on Dougie Hamilton to really carry the mail for you and do it, I'm not the biggest Dougie Hamilton guy. And I think they have a better defense, probably, though, that being said.
Yeah, I think so.
Wise with Falk and Van Riemsdyk and Slavin, and they got a really good defensive core there. Just up front, I mean, is Nino Niederreiter going to, like, you know, outscore it? But you want Niederreiter and Aho and Justin Williams and Jordan Staal, or do you want Baxter and Kuznetsov and Ovechkin?
I mean, when you say it, it's fucking sickening, really.
It's not even close. I mean, I don't see it being much of a series, but I think Holtby, you know, he's a guy that he got the big "I don't play well in the playoffs" off his back. So he had another guy that's been looking forward to this time of year all year. I just don't see them, knocking him off.
No, and as far as the series go, too, like the Caps and the Canes, and then like I really won't be sad if I miss any of the Calgary Colorado series. Like if I miss all those games, I think I'll be okay.
Yeah, although I think that Colorado's been interesting. I don't think they touched the Flames in that series.
No.
Again, it's a depth thing, but yeah, I think that the only reason that might be more is because of how good the Flames are. Just watch them having target practice there. Yeah. I mean, they should win that 1-4.
And the Caps, I think the Caps are going to sweep the Hurricanes. I think the Hurricanes, you know, should be happy with what they did this season. And you know, not only did you have the best season in franchise history, you pissed off Don Cherry, you created something that, you know, some hockey fans love, some hockey fans hate, and it for something to be successful, you know, what is that saying? Like, you know, you have to have half people love you and half people hate you.
Here's what I want to know. If they're, like, down 2-0 and they cut it to 2-1, are they going to fucking dance?
There's no way. There's fucking no way. There's no way.
They have to have said no.
There's no... I think Justin Williams came out and said they're not doing it, but what if they were like...
Okay, good.
What if they were just like... Fuck it. Like, they can't. They can't do it. They can't do it.
I know I'm getting older because of how much I hate that.
That dude, okay, I was going to ask you, and I didn't know if you would... I fucking think it's weird. Like, I think it's lame.
Is it a bad thing? No. But yeah, it's just fucking... It's weird. It's forced, too. It's like...
Yes!
They have to practice that shit.
Hey!
Like, somebody at the end of practice...
Hey, guys, come here. We're going to practice the surge. Fuck you.
And there has to be dudes that aren't into it, too. Like, I haven't really watched a lot of it, but I imagine some guys are just sitting there like, ugh. There's nothing wrong with it at all, but it's just one of those things where it's like one of those double standards thing where every hockey fan that likes that will complain about seeing it in the NFL. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It'll be a reason why they don't watch the NFL.
They just do a little too much flow boating for me.
And I don't know. I think that it's just not that interesting. It's just goofy. They just look silly. Like, it doesn't hurt anybody. Should they be not allowed to do it? Of course not. They should be allowed to do it. But I think it's something that will just go away. Cause there's no way, you know, 30-year-old Canadian millionaires are all going to be on board with this all the time, just dancing after a win. I'm sure it's like a superstition thing, but I didn't love it.
Like, if I'm in the room and they're like, "Hey, we're going to stay after practice and practice our dances," I got to go, guys. What the fuck are we doing here? And
yeah, but you know, I don't know how old you are, William, but for me, I just thought about, you know what, like, fucking, maybe it's just one of those things where...
No, I'm 32.
Like, yeah, I'm 33, so I thought maybe it is one of those things where I don't know what it's like. I knew what it was like just because I had friends. I didn't play junior hockey, but I had a lot of friends who played junior hockey, and a couple who played in the queue and stuff, and so I was around them, and I was like, oh, I understand the mentality of hockey, but I don't know what it's like to be in my early 20s. And into hockey. And then when you listen to the vernacular of hockey players, like, it's always been ridiculous.
Yeah,
the way hockey players talk. Now it's completely ridiculous.
It's bonkers.
Like, try and follow what a kid from Ontario, who speaks perfect English, by the way, is saying after a game about how many apples he had on the score sheet. And, you know, it's all coded language. It's all coded now. They all have, it's like, it's in the hockey's always been sort of its own culture. So I don't know, maybe this is, and the junior teams are always crazy with laser light shows. Maybe this is something that we're going to have to deal with moving forward.
I think we're like right on that cutoff line of like, if you're 30 now, you might not like the Surge, but like if you're 29, you fucking love it. And like, you're like, you wish they would do more Fortnite dances when they won.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe that's it. And also, you know, like we're in like the prime spending age to buy like nice framed pictures of like buildings and like, you know, like arenas and jerseys that have been signed. Like that's what we're doing. The younger market are the one that are going to buy the dancing t-shirts. So maybe like the league is even, you know,
smart,
slanting towards what the kids are going to want. But
I started noticing it like even when I was playing like NHL like 15 or 16, I'm like the music was getting really weird, and I was like, man, I don't know if I'm getting like out of touch or like am I starting to hate kids? Like I feel like 32 is young for me to be like these goddamn kids and their fucking Surge dancing.
And I'm also used to, you know, going to either Ranger games or Penguin games where no one has the social fabric of how to be entertaining during any sporting event like Madison Square Garden. And then on the flip side, no one is further away than Pittsburgh. You know, so it's been funny to watch, you know, so many swings and misses by the league and the teams at trying to get young people into it. And you know what? Young, goofy white kids from cold weather states are who love this game, and they're tall and lanky, and they all do that weird like Dougie dance, and they're all just goofs. So this might just be the future of the league.
Is
goofy, lanky kids have always been the NHL, and you know, now you know they're just getting older.
Is Colin a Surge guy? Colin Chamberlain, co-host of
He doesn't like it either. No, he is. I mean, he's younger, but he acts older. I mean, he acts like he's in his late 40s. So it's not surprising that he doesn't like any of that stuff. But no, we both don't like it.
I just think the Capitals are ready to just take care of business here in this series, and
I think that
it'd be a huge surprise if the Hurricanes can do it.
Yeah, I'd love to know the stats on the team that won the Stanley Cup the year before, how they do in that first series. Then, I mean, yeah. I know the Penguins haven't had a great record of that. They either go on to win the cup or they're out in the first or second round to somebody they should have beat the year after they win the cup.
Yeah,
but I think they just any of us who played sports growing up, like the playoff time of year is like what you live for, and you know. In the NHL, the regular season is so long, and the playoffs are so long. Like this is the time of year these guys really get up for. So I don't see them. I'm not saying I see the Capitals walking through the East at all, but I don't see them, you know, having trouble at all with Carolina.
Right now, just to touch on the goalies from the Islanders real quick, I just wanted to ask you, what do you think? Are they still going to do that one-two punch with Greiss and Leonard? Or do you think they kind of lean more on Leonard and see if he can handle it?
I think they're going to lean on Leonard. I like Greiss better.
I do too, but so, I think they're going to lean on Leonard as well.
I mean, yeah, because he seems to be the guy. I just, maybe it comes from, obviously, Greiss played, I think, most of the games against the Penguins here, and he just played well. So most of the games I was really watching intently with them, he was in and he was playing well. I think that their numbers are, like, identical, aren't they? I think that they're, like, right they're, there.
Like the so same no, person.
Yeah, like the same amount of games played, their save percentage is right there. Their goals against is, and I think Lerner's a little bit better in both. And so statistically, he's got a little bit of an edge. He played a couple more games. He only had, you know, a couple more wins, though. They're like dead even. So I think you go with who's hot, and I would go with Greiss, but it does seem like but you know, it's not a bad problem to have.
Right. It worked for Pittsburgh.
The second they have a you know, one of them has a bad game, the other one's in, and you can always when you light the fire underneath, you know, your number one goalie by bringing the number two goalie in and having him challenge that. When you go back to that number one goalie, you hope he's, you know, when you bring him back, he's ready to go. So I think that you know,
which those guys would be able to handle because they've been doing it all year.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that it's. You know, but even like when Mike Vernon and Osgood were splitting time in Detroit, and, you know, eventually that one year was like, it's got to be Vernon for, you know, the playoffs. I think that you do have to go with just ride who's hot, and you know, right now it could change. It could change from today's practice to tomorrow's practice. You know, so it will be. Yeah, I think it's to their advantage, though. I don't think that there's anything that you can even knock on that. And I think that having Barry Trotz, a guy who got all the pressure off of him already, he won the cup last year. The Islanders lost John Tavares. They still made the playoffs.
Yeah.
They were pretty much the better team without John Tavares.
Yeah.
They're not pretty. Yeah, pretty much they were a better team without John Tavares. So it's like, talk about, like, it's all downhill from here. Like, the arena's deal is kind of, like, finally, you know, going to be done there. They're going to figure everything out in Long Island, and they're okay without John Tavares. So everything's gravy with the Islanders. And I think that they really can win a couple series and make a run. But already, they're coming in with not that much pressure in a good way. From the whole organization from top down is coming in with a situation where they're not going to be gripping the stick too tight.
I agree 100%, man. Now, what would be your biggest surprise in the Metro Division this year? And then to counterpart that, what would be your biggest disappointment, you know, specifically in the Metro Division this season?
My biggest surprise, I think, is that Columbus went for it at the deadline.
That's wild, wasn't it?
Because I'm good for them. And I think that, you know, you guys, the Columbus fan base, deserves it. And I think that, you know, the return on that you're going to lose isn't that big. I mean, you know, picks-wise, it's going to be interesting. But
yeah.
I just think that they have to win a playoff series. They have to be exciting. And if they can make this exciting against Tampa, and I know it could be short-lived, but they at least have to do that and be competitive and just kind of build a culture there that makes people think, you know, let's buy tickets next year because they're going to win.
Yeah.
And I think that the Columbus fans have had to go through a lot of, we're almost there, now we're rebuilding.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I don't like patchworking teams. And I think the Rangers and the Flyers are great examples of how it doesn't work. And the Toronto Maple Leafs until basically this season are great examples of how that. But you have to try and stay competitive because, you know, if you know, Bobrovsky going or staying, I don't think it was that big a difference. And wouldn't you rather be as competitive as you can be for the rest of this season? And they got a bad draw. You would have loved to get somebody besides Tampa in that first round.
Yeah, but Columbus, don't you think, like, we've lost to Pittsburgh enough and we just lost to Washington, so why not get... I mean, we have just as good a shot at anyone, really, so fuck it, why not Tampa Bay?
I agree that they probably... I just think that it's... I could envision them winning a series or two in another path.
Yeah.
They stay in the Metro path. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That to have to go up against the big boy. Like I said, I don't think that anybody in the East besides Boston and Tampa beat Boston and Tampa in seven games.
If they go down 0-2, it's absolutely over. They have to steal one of those first two games.
Yeah. You have to go for the split, and you have to hope, really, you just love to think you can go into game 5 2-2, fresh series.
And what if,
like, you know, first to win two?
Because Bob's been weird this year, and he caught fire there at the end. And I just think, like, if he can just be that Bob that he's been sometimes, there's no reason they can't compete and beat this team. But if it does, I think it's absolutely seven games.
Well, that's why I said you had to keep him. If they trade him at the deadline,
he wouldn't have got shit.
You wouldn't get anything for him really worthwhile. And all of a sudden, now you're definitely not competitive. So that surprised me. I thought they were going to trade him, and I thought they were going to circle again as an organ. And I think it's important that they didn't. So, but yeah, I mean, you're right. Did they have as good a chance as anybody? Yeah, it's just such a shit draw.
I know, dude.
It's historically like one of the best teams in the history of
ever
regular season
fucking
hockey.
Ever.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, you could catch them sleeping early too. I think that, you know, the only way Tampa probably does lose is if they lose early. I think that if they get rolling, it's going to be hard to imagine them losing 4 out of 7 games. Yeah, you know, and if they do, I think it'd have to be versus the West. I think it'd have to be a Winnipeg or a San Jose that's just playing, you know, incredibly strategic hockey in the neutral zone with those two defensemen. It'd have to be something like that. I don't think it's going to be in the East. Maybe it's Boston, but I still don't think I'd pick Boston even to go 7 versus Tampa.
The rest of the Eastern Conference should be begging Columbus to take this as far as possible.
Absolutely. It's like the both years the Kings won the Cup. You can draw a line to them winning the Cup to the fact that the Hawks and the Penguins just kind of blew tires.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, right now, everyone in the league has to root for the clear Goliath to blow a tire.
Yes.
Because if they don't, and they almost need injuries, too. They don't just need to play bad.
Yeah, something has to happen.
Yeah, they're almost too good to imagine them losing in the East. Like I said, if they make it to the Cup Finals, it's so far away. It's like half a year away.
Yeah.
And who knows? You know, anything can happen by that point. But just in the East against familiar opponents who they just dominated this year, I don't see it happening.
What's nice?
I don't see anybody beating them.
What's nice is I've heard, you know, not only yourself but other, you know, credible people in the hockey sports media that I, you know, respect and take value in their opinions, except for people in Columbus that go, I'm glad Yarmo went to task here and put all his chips in because, one, it made trade deadline fun again, and it was necessary because, like you said, I don't think patching in and trying to rebuild on the fly works. So you try now, you give everything you got, because Bob and Brad probably aren't coming back. So yeah. Let's take this shot and then fucking we burn it to the ground. Yarmo gets fired, Tortorella gets fired, everyone gets fucking fired, and at least we tried.
And you still have the money. You don't lose the fact that all that right. cap space opens up.
You have a shit ton of money. No draft picks.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, it's a little bit of a harder path because now you have to win free agency to some degree. You can't just, you know, and there's only so many guys available every year. But that money is there. And I think that, you know, the travel is pretty easy for Columbus. The market is kind of cheap. If I'm a free agent and Columbus is offering me a bunch of money to go play there, I'm definitely thinking about it.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like nice, safe town.
Yeah. I mean, it's like San Jose without an ocean. It's all brand new. It's all nice new skyscrapers and condos. And, yeah, I think that they could, you know, but again, it's all contingent on them being able to make a college, you know, either three or four really, you know, nice depth signatures or get one. Get a nice benchmark in to make up for the bread man. And you know, you never want to lose a goalie, and you never want to lose a goalie without picks. But, you know, if you're going to have to do it this summer. Don't tank the rest of your season. So, yeah, I'm totally with the way they handle it.
I agree, man. What would be your biggest disappointment in the Metro this year?
Man, my biggest disappointment in the Metro. I mean, like, I guess it's the Devils, even though I'm not, like, that surprise.
I had them getting the second wild card.
Yeah, I thought that they could. I thought they'd be in the mix. I thought they'd be better. I mean, you know, I was talking to Bartnik about it. Like, he's under the impression. I think he's right. Their goaltending just really failed them. You know, they gave up a hell of a lot of goals, and they just, they just aren't there yet. And I think the Devils are kind of in more trouble than other teams because they just don't have that young. They have a lot of youth. You know, but most of their youth is like, oh, they're going to pan out to be third liners, I feel like. I don't know if the Devils have that much to be excited about moving forward. And like I said, when you already have trouble in goal.
I think their decor is, I mean, suspect at best.
Yeah, at very best. And I think that, you know, if Taylor Hall isn't on the team, right? Like, I think that's like the big... Like, I know the Devils, it's ridiculous to say, but without him, they're even worse.
Yeah.
And so it's like when you're that bad a team.
And that was apparent this year. When he wasn't there, they were shit.
Yeah, they couldn't do anything. And when you're that, when you're not that good a team and you're that reliant on one guy, you know, like you said, once the injuries happen, like, it's over. And then they didn't get any goaltending, you know, so... I think they're my biggest disappointment. Did I think they were going to necessarily do anything? No, but I didn't think they'd be abysmal.
No,
I thought they'd be better than, you know, the Rangers. You know, right? But they weren't. And so I think they're my big... I think for the most part, the Metro kind of panned out the way we thought it would.
Yeah, it kind of broke down exactly how you thought you went.
Yeah.
Well,
the Islanders obviously were a surprise.
That one.
I had them kind of with the Devils. Like, yeah, they might make it and stuff. You know what I mean? And And but yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. But as soon as the Islanders hired Trotz, I was like, this is not going to be as bad as everyone's saying. This Tavares departure is not. And Anders Lee and Bailey, they've been underrated like for years.
Yeah,
now. Like they're bona fide like all stars. Yeah, it was still a normal all star game format, I'm sure. I don't think it's been that surprising. So yeah, I guess I'd say Islanders, along with the Jackets going for it, are definitely pretty surprising.
It helped Trotz came in pissed. Like, you know, Capitals say they're going to fire him in the first series. He wins the cup. They're like, well, you could probably stay. And he's like, nah, fuck you, kick rocks.
You know, Ted Leonsis is just such an asshole. And I try never to, like, be like, oh, I'm a Penguins fan, so I don't like this or that about an organization. But I just can't stand that guy. And the fact that he finally broke through and, you know, didn't give Trotz a blank check, like,
right.
You know, and by the way, like, you know, Todd Reirden was the guy in Pittsburgh for a long time, and you know, he was defensive coach for years. I believe the first, the 09 Cup, he was behind the defenseman. But what? Like, he's the guy that you're okay with going with now? And, like, again, it hasn't backfired that bad, but because their roster didn't change.
Right. You and I probably could have got this team there.
I'm not saying it's easy, but I mean, there's a lot of skill up front there, and they still have an all-world goalie.
Right, right.
So it's like, yeah, the defense is probably thinner than it's been. But I mean, they stomached losing Carl Alsner and won the cup.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that having capable puck-moving defensemen is all you need, and they got enough of that. But yeah, I don't know. Don't count the Caps out. I do like the Caps and the Bruins the best against Tampa when it comes down to it, but I still just don't see the team beat.
Who do you think we'll see in the final?
You know, the final that I picked before the season is what I'm going to stick with. I said San Jose versus Tampa.
Okay.
The two teams that, you know, consistently are their fan bases get mad at for them not getting it done. I just think San Jose.
I want San Jose.
I just don't want to pick Winnipeg. Winnipeg's better. Winnipeg's a better team. And I think Calgary's a better team. But I just think that, you know, going back to the Ducks in 07, when they had Niedermeyer and Pronger both eating up a half hour ice time again. And now you have Burns and Carlson both eating up a half hour of ice time again. If they can get leads and play like a pitch and putt game, they can win, and also they can score, so they can also go down by a couple of goals and still be really dangerous. And they have two of the best offensive defensemen besides Chris Letang are on their roster.
Yeah.
So either way that the first period shakes out, they're going to come out flying in the second. You know, so I really like that team in seven game series scope. Like the regular season is one thing; you got to fly to Tampa one night, and then you're flying to Nashville. They have seven games. People have to beat that team, a team with two all-world defensemen on the ice, or one all-world defenseman on the ice at all times. Four out of seven times, it's just going to be a tall order. And I guess it is more of me rooting, because like I said, on paper, is there any reason to pick Calgary or to not pick Calgary or Winnipeg? No, I think that they're both better teams, but I just, something about having two, you know, Norris Trophy winners, you know, future Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
On the ice the whole game.
And how sweet would it be to see Jumbo Joe lift that fucking cup?
That's exactly what I was going to say. And also, they got to re-sign Joey Pavelski. This team might look a lot different. It's definitely going to look pretty different next year.
Yeah.
So of all the times we've talked about San Jose having good teams and the window kind of, this is really it.
Yeah.
The window's really going to close. If it's going to open again, it's going to be with different players, different jersey numbers. I think they might try and keep Carlson and have Pavelski leave. You know, but I don't know because everyone's going to offer Carlson a check.
Yeah, Carlson would be a tall order.
Yeah, but I think that
They'll offer him, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, everyone is. That's the thing. It's like everyone's going to have an offer, and it's going to be where he wants to go.
Yeah.
It's going to be up to him. And, I think that they're going to have a lot of urgency, and they have a lot of leadership and legs. And like I said, they're probably the third best team in that conference. But for some reason, I'm just gutting them. I'm just picking them.
Yeah, I picked them to meet Pittsburgh again this year, you know, as a rematch from a couple years
that
ago.
That would be neat.
I'd like it. Just get another storyline in there, like revenge on who they lost to before Jumbo gets. It's like,
it's like a fucking movie. I just that's what I want to see. Now I think I want to see San Jose, and I hope to God somehow Columbus gets it, just because I need it, man. I need it.
You know what? Like, I became a Penguins fan basically in 1993 because I was a little kid living in Pittsburgh, and you know I was born in '86. So geez, quick math. I was like 5 or 6 when they win their first 2 cups. You know, And I remembered them happening like you remember any fuzzy memory,
right?
So for me, the first cup was '09.
Yeah,
and I think that like there's a level of like.
It's got to feel good.
Of like the more years you wait, the better it feels.
It's got to feel
like,
good.
And it's like 16 felt amazing. Didn't feel like 09 was like still one of the best nights of my life. and then 17 was like you're just happy for the players almost at that point. You're
yeah.
Like, oh, good. He gets another notch on it because it is like such a release. But I think you know it's like anything else, the longer you wait. But I know it's a terrible thing to say, especially Toronto fans don't want to hear that.
It's but, like 1967.
Yeah, the longer you wait in your lifetime to see it happen, it's an amazing build. Like, at least you guys know that they're fucking going for it now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, they've proven to the fans they want to win, they want to stay interesting. And I really don't like the idea of firing Trotz. I don't. I think that when you have a Lavalette,
I love him. I fucking love him.
Trotz or Trotz or Tortorella, excuse me, I get them both mixed up. When you have guys like that, I don't get why those guys have moved around even as much as they have, especially Peter Laviolette.
Yeah.
I don't know why hockey tends to turn him away, but yeah, I think that he's got a culture there.
And he does.
You know, why not keep it? It's not like he's underperformed either. I really don't think that you can really blame him for bringing those rosters to where he did. I mean, he's lost to really good teams in the playoffs.
I think you keep Torts until he says he wants to retire. I think at this point he's earned it, and he's changed hockey in Central Ohio, period. I mean, they've never seen them win like this ever in the fucking 20 years we've been a team. It's never happened.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm a huge Torts fan. I'm like a huge fan of his. So.
Me too. And I know he's posterizing or whatever, but I'm a huge Torts fan too. I was before this and I will be after this.
Yeah, I as much as I hated those Rangers teams, I loved watching him in New York. And I just love how his players never, like, there's a couple players that always go on to have problems with him, right? But for the most part, his players love him to the point where when Brad Richards gets to New York, he's like, I want, you know, we all want Tortorella here.
Yeah.
And like that New York team with St. Louis, like, his stars want to come play for him again.
Yeah.
That's how much his players like him. So to a degree, it's like, I don't care how much the media and the fans of certain places might not like him. The players love him. The reason why, you know, he's coached the Olympic team.
Right, man. Well, Andy, dude, I appreciate your fucking time, man. I always have a blast talking to you. Tell the Biscuit Babies where to find you and all your social media and Instagram and the podcast and everything.
Andy Picarro, A-N-D-Y-P-I-C-A-R-R-O on everything, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and the Unhealthy Scratch podcast, which is now more of a bi-weekly one. I mean, Little Colin's been very busy lately. Very happy for him. He's a very busy little guy. So I do that, and I do Puck Off about every month and a half or so.
I was going to say, you've been guesting on there a lot, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool to go and do a podcast at a place that's nicer than any radio station I've ever
been to. Yeah, because you guys do them at All Things Comedy now, right?
All Things Comedy, which is like literally, it's really daunting to turn on a microphone. And there's a poster of the 7 most popular podcasts.
Bill Burr's ever. Looking at you.
there's a Bill Burr picture, a Burt Kreischer picture, like the doll up, like every podcast that you know that does live reads and makes real money is all of a sudden on the wall.
Are they putting those on YouTube, like video too?
I know that they go out on Facebook. I don't know if they stay anywhere or do anything.
So they go live on Facebook?
Yeah, I know that there's a live video stream. I'm not sure, because it's not extremely visual, me, Joe, and Frazier sitting there.
Bullshit, I could watch you three all day, dude.
you can watch us start to open our mouths about to talk over each other. I'm not sure where it goes, but yeah, it's an amazing place they have there. I mean, it's really becoming its own, like,
world
broadcast station.
Yeah.
Out of All Things Comedy, so it's really kind of amazing to even be able to go in that building.
Well, I'm happy for you, man. You always kill it on there, and tell Bartnick I said what's up, and You know, always the best of luck to you, and be safe out there, man.
I will. Keep it coming with those guests, man. If you can get the Arias Kasparaitis in, that would be...
I've got some bangers coming up soon. Keep your eyes peeled.
I know you're going to, man. Congratulations. It's been great watching the podcast grow.
Fuck yeah, man. Love your time. Thanks, buddy.
Always, William. Thank you.
Yep, bye.